Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, January 10th, 2022. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up on our Bible reading. We're in the Gospel of Luke. We read last week chapter 16. So tonight we'll be looking at chapter 17. Okay, Luke chapter 17, if I get my mouse going here. Read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 17. Then said he unto the disciples, It is impossible but that offenses will come. But woe unto him through whom they come. It were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and he cast into the sea, than that he should offend one of these little ones. Take heed to yourselves. If thy brother trespass against thee, rebuke him. And if he repent, forgive him. And if he trespass against thee seven times in a day, and seven times in a day turn again to thee, saying, I repent, thou shalt forgive him. And the apostles said unto the Lord, Increase our faith. And the Lord said, If ye had faith as a grain of mustard seed, ye might say unto this sycamine tree, Be thou plucked up by the root, and be thou planted in the sea, and it should obey you. But which of you, having a servant ploughing or feeding cattle, will say unto him by and by, when he has come from the field, Go and sit down to meat, and will not rather say unto him, Make ready wherewith I may sup, and gird thyself, and serve me till I have eaten and drunken, and afterward thou shalt eat and drink? Doth he thank that servant because he did the things that were commanded him? I trow not. So likewise ye, when ye shall have done all those things which are commanded you, say, We are unprofitable servants. We have done that which was our duty to do. And it came to pass, as he went to Jerusalem, that he passed through the midst of Samaria and Galilee. And as he entered into a certain village, there met him 10 men that were lepers, which stood afar off. And they lifted up their voices and said, Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. And when he saw them, he said unto them, Go show yourselves unto the priests. And it came to pass that as they went, they were cleansed. And one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back and with a loud voice glorified God, and fell down on his face at his feet, giving him thanks. And he was a Samaritan. And Jesus answering said, Were there not 10 cleansed? But where are the 9? There are not found that return to give glory to God, save this stranger. And he said unto him, Arise, go thy way. Thy faith hath made thee whole. And when he was demanded of the Pharisees when the kingdom of God should come, he answered them and said, The kingdom of God cometh not with observation. Neither shall they say, Lo here, or Lo there. For behold, the kingdom of God is within you. And he said unto the disciples, The days will come when ye shall desire to see one of the days of the Son of Man, and ye shall not see it. And they shall say to you, See here, or See there. Go not after them, nor follow them. For as the lightning that lighteneth out of the one part under heaven shineth unto the other part under heaven, so shall also the Son of Man be in his day. But first must he suffer many things, and be rejected of this generation. And as it was in the days of Noe, so shall it be also in the days of the Son of Man. They did eat, they drank, they married wives, they were given in marriage, until the day that Noe entered into the ark, and the flood came and destroyed them all. Likewise also as it was in the days of Lot, they did eat, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, they builded. But the same day that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. Even thus shall it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. In that day, he which shall be upon the housetop, and his stuff in the house, let him not come down to take it away. And he that is in the field, let him likewise not return back. Remember Lot's wife. Whosoever shall seek to save his life shall lose it, and whosoever shall lose his life shall preserve it. I tell you, in that night there shall be two men in one bed, the one shall be taken, and the other shall be left. Two women shall be grinding together, the one shall be taken, and the other left. Two men shall be in the field, the one shall be taken, and the other left. And they answered and said unto him, Where, Lord? And he said unto them, Wheresoever the body is, thither will the eagles be gathered together.
Okay, let me just clear the board here. Mouse doesn't want to work with me here today. Okay, we don't have a subject matter tonight, so we're going to go pretty quick into an open forum. I do want to make a few points of some things that have been taking place here with National Liberty Alliance and our website particularly, and then we'll also see if we have any questions or any announcements to be made. But over the past, matter of fact, I think it started on Friday. We've been having a lot of problems with our website. I think someone has gotten into our website and has done some damage, but we've been able to really pick things back up. That started a little over a week or two, maybe close to 2 weeks ago. It's been a while. We've been working on it for quite some time, bringing everything back up together. And again, it's been kind of a blessing in disguise because it gave me the opportunity to go back and redo everything on the website as far as organizing it and cleaning some page up and updating pages, maybe putting on a few new pages, preparing a couple of courses. And this has taken a lot of my time, so I haven't been able to do much of my regular work that I need to be doing, and hopefully by the end of this week I'll be able to get back to that. And one of those things is we want to write some papers concerning sheriffs that some counties we have no sheriffs in. Connecticut, and we speak about this from time to time, Connecticut has no sheriffs. New York has lost 7 of their sheriffs over the years, 7 counties. Alaska has no sheriffs, and Hawaii has no sheriffs. And I don't think they've ever had sheriffs. Maybe Hawaii has. I'm not sure. We're going to be looking into that. We're looking into the history. We've had someone to do a lot of research already. I haven't had time to look at it yet, but hopefully this week I'll get through it all on the Connecticut problem. And we're going to write some papers and prepare for filing some papers to have our sheriffs reinstated and in the places where they're not, where they've been taken away. And I don't think we're going to do it before we get to the other side because I think it'll be a lot of waste of time. But on the other hand, maybe we should do it before and let the court violate us. And again, it's another nail in their coffin. It's just another piece of evidence, their denial of upholding their oath to protect and uphold the Constitution. So we'll see where that goes. There's other papers we want to write and prepare and particularly against some judges and against the United States Supreme Court to put them on notice and see what they do once they're put onto the notice. Either they're going to step up and be the champions of the Constitution, which is what their job is. That is their sole job, is to champion the Constitution. They have no other purpose than to champion the Constitution. And they haven't done it. They haven't done it in quite some time. But we'll give them their final opportunity, after which I think we need to seriously think about potential indictments of the United States Supreme Court justices, and our desire and fortitude to make sure we push those indictments through. We need to be redundant and very pushy about that, for lack of a better word. But we'll talk about that. We'll think about what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. But something has to be done, definitely on the other side, of course. But we'll see where we think we need to start filing those papers. Hopefully other things will start happening soon, and we can get back to the business of America and put all these traitors either in jail or at the end of a short rope. Hopefully that time is close. I know we've been all waiting a long time, but all of us that have been injured one way or another, we're just casualties of war. We have to realize that. You know, it's a lot easier suffering the sufferings we've been suffering than to have to suffer the gun battles and the things of and the horror of war. So it's a different kind of war. I do see at some point the military is going to have to take its action, and I'm sure it's going to be somewhat a horror at that particular state of situation. But the people, until that time comes, we just have to do the best we can and defend ourselves the best we can, and prepare on how we can deal with whoever is left at the end of the day. Recently, I think it was Friday, somehow someone broke into our website. I have no idea. They're still looking into this. And they were able to cause some donations to go through on a number of different people. It turns out the people that they used to do this were actual members. Now, of course, there's no connection to their banking or, you know, credit cards, because we don't hold anybody's credit cards. We never have that information. That goes straightly, you know, to the banks and the necessary, what would you call it, transition from one point to another point. It's highly secured. It's all a banking system. So National Liberty Alliance doesn't have anyone's banking information. We don't have anybody's credit card. Nothing is saved on our website or anything. But someone was able to get in there and push some buttons and make it look like people had given very large donations to National Liberty Alliance, and it amounted up to almost $100,000. One person gives $5,000, another $2,000, and $1,000. And again, it was just letters going out and telling the people, thanking them for their donations, these huge donations. So if you've got one of those letters, bear in mind it. No information has gotten out to these people. No banking information for surely has not gotten out to these people. It was just an execution of thank you letters going out to people for giving donations, which, of course, didn't happen, of course. That was the point. So we are under attack, I think. I'm waiting to hear back from the text that they're looking in to see how this happened or how it could have happened, if there's any kind of fingerprints. They do feel that there should be some fingerprints in there. They should be able to establish something in it. Whatever they come up with, I'll let everybody know. But until then, I just want to put everybody at ease that nothing has compromised anyone's information and nothing has compromised anyone's banking. So that's an important thing I wanted to get out tonight. Other than that, we don't have a subject matter tonight. So like I said, we're going to go right into an open forum pretty quickly. First, we want to see if there's any questions or if there is any announcements that need to be made. Jan, Terry?
I don't have any announcements. I do have several questions for the evening.
Okay.
The first is, I'd like to start a conversation with our sheriff, who seems like a pretty upstanding guy in Oswego County, New York. I also still need some education on all of this, but I'd like to plant some seeds and develop a local NLA conversation group where maybe we can develop our skills and education together. As a brand new member here, where do I start? I'll buy the book shortly.
Okay. The key thing is really preparing the sheriff for the first meeting, and that comes, we have that campaign for constitutional sheriffs going on. where people will buy their sheriff a book, and we will mail it out directly to them with a letter from Sheriff Darr out of Michigan. He's been working with the sheriffs, not only in his state, but I believe across the nation, and organizing sheriffs and encouraging them to return to the Constitution. You know, they never were taught the Constitution. They're as ignorant as we are, or were. You know, we're, of course, educating ourselves. But it begins there, to get that thing going to the sheriff. While that's happening, people should be doing two things. And again, this is why I'm thankful that we had the opportunity to go over the entire website. Even though I really didn't feel I had the time, I had no choice. I was forced to do it because of all of the disruption and destruction on our website, to reorganize everything. And again, like I said, I think it's a blessing in disguise, because we've set things up with a much easier path. Anybody that comes on to the website, if they read through our front page here and watches the videos, which is the very first thing anyone should do, and this very first video on our website and on the front page is a seminar of government by consent that we recorded on 12/18/2021. So we did a live seminar here at National Liberty Alliance, and we did it on 12/18/2021. So it's recorded. It's an audio video. So people can attend that seminar. It's about 3 hours long, and it lays out everything, the entire plan. It talks about the Committee of Safety, the history of the Committee of Safety, how the Pilgrims used the Committee of Safety, how our founding fathers and the people in the colonies used it all the way through up until our founding fathers created this nation. They used the Committee of Safety. They used the Committee of Safety to muster together the Continental Congress on two occasions, and also to fight the war. It was the Committee of Safety who's done everything. And the Committee of Safety is a system that is set up when the government fails, and it runs alongside the government, so to speak, and fills in the gaps of the things that the government doesn't supply, as a plan is then focused in on bringing their government back under control. In the case, of course, of our founding fathers, they could not work things out with Britain, so they separated themselves from them. In our case, it's a matter of criminals getting control of our country. We haven't been a republic in truth for quite some time now, and I think the final the final destruction, I think, of the presidency. The legislators were taken over a long time ago. The legislators have been controlled by the deep state or the powers that be or whatever you want to call them. And, of course, above that is the New World Order. And they've had control of our legislators for quite some time. This goes all the way back to the turn into the 20th century, you know, with the Federal Reserve Act and the 16th Amendment, the 17th Amendment, and all that destructive stuff that was going on. And even before that, going back to 1871, I believe it was, where the Organic Act took place. So we've lost that a long time ago. And they've been building a statutory prison for quite some time. They've been creating statutes, legislation that created statutes and codes and different acts and things that have just totally turned this nation upside down and has removed us from a natural law republic to a democracy. And a democracy is nothing but mob rule to begin with, so it's a lot of chaos, and the purpose of a democracy is to bring forth an oligarchy, because that's what a democracy ends up being. And I think we can safely say, at least by 1963, by the assassination of President Kennedy, the administration, the presidency, had been seized and under the control of these maniacs. I can think of a lot of words for these people, but let's just use the word maniacs. These people are insane. And things have gotten worse as time has gone on, and we were in deep, deep trouble until Trump came around, and thank God has turned things around. And I think things are going to change soon, hopefully sooner than later. But in any event, that's kind of where we're at. And so our nation has been totally destroyed as far as, you know, a lot of legislation and a lot of things this country is doing. People do seriously believe we are a democracy. I'm just beside myself. I even hear the United States Supreme Court justices. I've heard a couple of them talking and referring to us as a democracy. Can they be that ignorant? Okay, that they would make such a statement as a democracy? Our founding fathers didn't even use those words. The only time they used the word democracy was in the Federalist Papers. I think it was Federalist number 10. It was in the Federalist Papers when there was no way we were going to be a democracy. Our founding fathers abhorred democracy. They called it mob rule. So clearly that's not who we are or what we are. I'm kind of getting off track here. But going back to where the question is what to do. Learn what's going on by watching, going through the front page thoroughly. And anybody who hasn't gone to front page in the past, I'd say a couple of weeks, anything on the older end, you should go through the front page now because it's a whole new layout and it's really focused in on trying to lead people down two paths. One, a path of education, and two, a path of action. And we have to be doing it at the same time. We don't need to get educated in order to be active. But we need to be active as we're getting educated. So this is extremely important because the people have to fill the power void that's about to hit this nation. A lot of people are going to be imprisoned, and like I said, even some many are going to be executed. And, of course, after they get their day in court, and justice will prevail. But during that time, there's going to be a power void, and the people need to fill that power void, and therein is the Committees of Safety. So if you look on our top blue tab, you'll find an educational tab, okay, and you'll see Start Here. Just click on Start Here and Start There. That's where you start, right here. Your education starts here. And it walks you through the process. Now, we're still working. A lot of these links, the foundation study hopefully will be up this week. And we also have a jury administrator's course that will be up this week. But that doesn't stop people from getting involved, taking an introduction to the constitutional course. I believe that course has been reopened. If not, I'll try to get that open this week. And if not, you can go to the civics course. And at some point, people should go back to the foundational course study. It's a foundational study. It's not really a course per se where the quizzes are going to be involved in that as it is in the rest of it, rest of the courses we have. It's really, you know, preparing of the mind, giving the people the right kind of a mindset by exposing them to certain information and situations and patriotic realizations and sort of giving you a right proper state of mind. So I think that's what the foundational study is going to accomplish. But anyway, just follow the breadcrumb trail right here on this page, okay? And get your education. After you finish your education, you can go to the higher education, and you can be doing that at the same time if you want. But ultimately, it's under the educational tab. I mean, we have American history, we have articles and essays, we have educational videos, we have things on the law, we have government by consent book, we have the topical subjects, very important information, historical situations, factual situations, you know, what's going on with money and, you know, our food and our air and our water being poisoned and so on. So this educational tab has a tremendous amount of information underneath it, and we'll be adding on to that. There's some more pages I want to resurrect back up into here, this area. We had the original Continental Congress. Someone had brought up recently about going into the Continental, getting the Continental Congress going. I guess they didn't know that that has already happened. That happened in 2008. I ran a polling down in Poughkeepsie, New York, for Dutchess County area to elect representatives for the Continental Congress. So it was the third Continental Congress that took place. And in 2008, I believe the election took place, and they actually met, I believe, in the winter of 2008 and 2009, I think, if I recall, or maybe it was 2009. a little later, but I believe it was over the winter of 2008 and 2009. And they ended up with the Articles of Freedom, which we do have a copy up on the website, and we'll also be applying that. But we do have a video series of all that took place and what has led up to the Continental Congress. And it took years to really lead up to the Continental Congress. And that was the work of Robert Schultz with We the People. And he had a couple of things going in 2001 in Washington, D.C. It was broadcast over C-SPAN. And there was a couple of things he did out there. And we have all of the video and information on all of that stuff. And like I said, all the stuff that led up. Now, we used to have some pages up, but we had to take them down because all the video was shut down off of YouTube. So I'll be resurrecting those pages back up because it is really some powerful, powerful information and stuff. And the final results being the Articles of Freedom is really impressive. Robert Schultz and many of the people that are involved in that, even though they did a great job and put everything together, I think... They failed to have the weaving of common law throughout their Articles of Freedom. And that's going to be our job as we, the people, through our committees of safety, to make sure if we execute those Articles of Freedom, which we should, to make sure we add to it the common law attitude or position or whatever word you might want to use for that posture. Matter of fact, I might even write a paper in order to add on to that if I have some time as time goes on. But again, the Articles of Freedom came up with a lot of conclusions and commands to our government on the state level and the federal level and so on. And we have all that information, and we want to get it back up there. And again, it's an education. It's part of history. The other thing, while we're doing education, simultaneously, we should be active. So you should start a committee of safety, and that starts right here. You can click on the Start a Committee of Safety tab, and there's a short page to read, which will lead you down into the next tab. Click here to start a committee of safety in your county, which really is the same thing as start here to organize a committee of safety. All right? And this page is a synopsis of NLA's comprehensive plan to save our republic. So you can get a really good picture, an overview, a framework, if I may, of what of creating this committee of safety. Looking at the comprehensive plan, looking at this, you can get an overview of the comprehensive plan. So go through this, and you will get a good picture. I would go through it just for educational purposes, in the sense of just trying to understand how we're putting things together, not necessarily exercising your committee of safety from this page directly. But it is a beginning of a setup to do so. And we have a handbook, which you'll find on a couple of places on this page. You should find it on the top and I believe on the bottom. Or you can just come here, start a committee of safety, and come down to handbooks and tools. And the handbook is a step-by-step instructional handbook to get a committee of safety going. And the process leads to, actually, at some point, after we put our charter together for the county, get our seal, get a resolution, put it together in a nice booklet form, take it down to Staples, have them seal the edges to bind it, and get a numerous copies together so that you can hand it out to every government that you visit, you know, whether it be the local government within a village or a town or a city, whether it be the state government, the county government, or, of course, the federal government. But basically, you know, we're really working local, and local working together with local, county to county, and state to state will deal with our federal. But anyway, this paperwork is important, and you produce it and bring it to the sheriff. That should happen at the first meeting. Actually, your first meeting is only a 5 or 10 minute meeting with the sheriff. And we explain all this and tell you approximately when this should be done and what has to be done before you do this. Meanwhile, your sheriff needs to be primed. And that priming takes place with, the Campaign for Constitutional Sheriffs, which is getting the sheriff a copy of the book, Government by Consent, with a letter from Sheriff Darr and a letter from National Liberty Alliance introducing ourselves and sheriff introducing the necessity of what needs to be done by every sheriff in America, and introduces the book and National Liberty Alliance to them. So they'll already be primed. You get your first 5 or 10 minute meeting just to kind of connect with the sheriff. Give them a copy of your who you are as a people by giving them a copy of the charter and all the necessary paperwork that goes underneath that charter, such as the resolution and your seal and so on. And then you get a meeting going. He comes to your next meeting, which should be about 30 days away, 20 days away, whatever it is. Give him time to digest this information. Hopefully he's already been looking at the book and reading through it. But if not, hopefully at this point he's going to start. It's got a good a listing of all of the different topics in the front page on an index. So you can pick and choose and jump around the book. The book is written in such a way you can start anywhere in this book. And so that's your first meeting with the sheriff. If you do it correctly and properly, it should be very, very, a very good meeting. It should be very profitable for everybody. And the sheriff will understand exactly who you are, what you're doing by doing it this way. He's not connecting with what he may think is a fringe group or whatever. And whatever others say, like the county attorney concerning us, he'll have the ability to ignore that now once he understands who we are and what we're doing and how we're doing it. And it's all being done properly. This is how our founding fathers did these things, by creating committees of safety. They did a charter. They did, and that's exactly what we need to do. They did resolutions. It's exactly what we must do. And they had seals. It's exactly what we must do. And so this is the way we take our government back. And the focus is to try to get approximately 200 people as quick as possible, or at least 100 people. I'm going to work out. I think the average is probably about 150 people. I don't think it's as high as 200. But 150 people, let's say, on the average per county. I live in a pretty highly populated county, and we have 249 election districts. And we should have at least one person for each election district. Of course, the desire is getting many more. We're going to have 1,000 people, 2,000 people get involved in this Committee of Safety. The more, the merrier. The more the people involved, the stronger we are. And the more control, not only that we get, but more knowledge we get, and we'll understand a lot better how to have government by consent, as much as our government needs to understand how we ought to have government by consent, that is, the people in government. So that is the plan. That is the basic layout. I mean, there's a lot of more information up here and a lot of things going on, but those are the two places. Everything else will fall in place as time goes on. We have a lot of things under our welcome tab. We got things under our today's issues tab. We got directory. We got members things that members are involved with here. We got federal court cases. Tremendous amount of papers going into the court. That is an education in itself. Reading the papers is an education. You want to learn how to write papers? Read the papers, and you'll come to see how we do that. I worked on a book called Court Access, and it's kind of I'm not really happy with it, but it is up on the website. It is available. But I plan on writing a book called Court Access. I'm hoping to get to it in the months ahead and get that out published. I'll probably give a free copy of that book, online PDF copy, but I'll also put it into a publishing copy also. As soon as I get it going. But I do have a copy up on our website right now, and that should be under the educational tab. And that would be, let me see where that would be. I think it would be under law. Okay. Yeah, there it is, law. And let's see, come under law, and it would come down to court forms and process. So I've got a lot of information on that page. Anybody that is struggling in the courts, trying to figure out how things work out, we got info there. And I wrote a handbook that's on this page. You can get it. But a lot of instructions, a lot of forms, how to move a case, how to challenge jurisdiction, how to file a case, do a habeas corpus, move the court for enforcement, notice and demand. And I got lots of downloads of different information and lots of memorandums. And there's more memorandums to come. We have 30 memorandums in the book. We have memorandums here. And there'll be a lot more memorandums, a lot of memorandums I haven't even published yet. And I'm just working on them to perfect them to the best that I can anyway and get them out there. This page, though, you know, there's a couple of pages or a couple of things you have to be a premier member in order to get access to. And a premier member is someone who is donating $5 a month or more. So anybody, pretty much anyone can afford to be a premier member. Give up one cup of coffee and a bagel or a donut once a month, and there's your premier member for the $5. But that will give you access to the Government by Consent course, and that will give you access to this information here that I'm looking at on the law and court forms and process. I don't know whether there's any other pages we have that requires someone being a premier member. Jen, do you remember if there's any other pages, or Terry, do you remember if there's any other pages that require people to be a premier member in order to get access to, other than these two?
Just the course, John, I think.
Yeah, the course and that page. That's the only two I can think of, so that's it. So everything else we have is free, and but at some point we figured we have to make some money to pay the bills, and that's how we pay the bills. I call it the widow's mite. You know, $5 is not that much, and, you know, when you get 100 people together, that's $500, and $500 doesn't get you much. But thankfully, we have a lot of people, you know, give maybe $10, some people $20, we've got some people who give $50 and $100. So we really appreciate that. But all in all, we are really supported by a lot of people giving us $5 a month. So the power of the widow's mite, so to speak. Anyone familiar with that out of the Bible? Okay. So anyway, I guess that's it for that question. I know it was long, and we kind of went off trail here a few times on this, but I think we've got out a lot of good information. Is there any other questions?
Yes, I have several more. This next one comes in two parts. It starts, I'm getting sued for breach of contract to sell my apartment. I have a question regarding the case sensitivity and the legal entity. In the contract, my name appears typed as so-and-so in lowercase with caps on the initial letters. In the court document filed with the court, my name was typed Amy L., all caps, in other words. It seems they are using the incorrect legal entity from what I thought I understood from some online courses. I wanted to find out your thoughts on this. Is this the correct understanding? Attached is a copy of the sales contract that the buyer is accusing me of breaching and the lawsuit documents I received in the mailbox on January 4th. So it's the old upper lowercase name issue.
Yeah. Again, the issue of the lowercase and the uppercase, it is true. You know, they played the game, and it really is a corporation. They incorporated the United States quite some time ago. It really, the foundation of that process really started in 1871. With the Organic Act, and they have been constructing this system, this thing, this prison, change of government from a natural law republic to a democracy. And they've been working at that piece by piece over the years, right and left, working together. Like I've always said, you go in and you're going to elect the criminal on the right or the criminal on the left. You don't get any choices. Once in a while, a good person gets in, but generally speaking, it's the criminal on the right and the criminal on the left. And so these are the people we've been electing into our legislators. I mean, it's pretty obvious now, anybody watching what's going on, that the Republican Party is as corrupt and as bad as the Democratic Party. It's more obvious that the Democrats are in pretty bad shape, and ultimately, generally speaking, these people in power, they're just evil. But it is pretty much the same case. They're just a little hidden, and a lot of them carry Bibles around to look good. I know that I used to see Bush walk around with a Bible all the time. But they're as evil as the others. It's been a right-left punch all the way through. The RINOs have been in charge, and they were working along with the plan, both the Democrats and the Republicans, to bring this new world order into play here and to destroy our republic. And so this is the battle that we've been facing and going through. But in any event, the idea of trying to use this information, which is what we call fiction, and to make your argument in the court and think that you're going to say a few words and make a few points, click your heels and be, you know, transported into a court of justice. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So I wouldn't bother fighting the battle that way. I'd fight the battle on justice. I would bring forth a just case. Here's the bottom line, okay? If you are in breach of contract, acknowledge it and deal with it outside of court and just get on with it. Accept the results are that the contract lays out. If you're not in breach of contract, then put together your case and go forward and battle them. I don't know what the case is about, if it's a private contract or they're trying to work out some kind of a government contract. Some people are claiming that there's some contract between the government and the people, or with the IRS and the people, or with whatever the case may be. Yeah.
The second question kind of deals with that. If you'd like me to read that, you could.
Yeah, go ahead, before I get too far into something that doesn't even matter.
On a separate topic, I believe I have valid reasons for not following through on the contract, because I have documented the 9 months long work to investigate and obtain documents that the notice of liens filed that appear on the buyer's title report are invalid. After 9 months elapsed, I now have a job that requires me to be in New York. That's where the apartment is. So my circumstances have changed over the long period of time required to investigate and obtain documentation that the notice of liens filed on the title report are invalid. Also due to I'm remaining in the house rather than selling for a higher offer. Any thoughts on that?
Well, again, I still don't understand if this is a mortgage thing, if it's a tax thing, or what it is. But
just a sales contract, John.
Just a sales contract. Okay. Yeah. You know, look, a contract's a contract. It's binding. And if you broke the contract, then you should deal with it. You know, I was a construction manager for many, many years, and I've argued lots of cases, with engineers as arbitrators, or architects as arbitrators, because generally that's what happens on the large website, on the large construction sites. We try to keep everybody out of court. My position has always been, admit you're wrong where you're wrong and fight like hell where you're right. If you got a just system set up and a just individual overseeing that, they'll see that, and you'll get good results out of that. You'll win a little and you'll lose a little and you walk away. Now, if there are certain cases, there has to be a meeting of a mind for the contract. So there has to be an agreement, a communication going back and forth for the creation of that contract. Sometimes there's deception there. I'm involved in something like that right now where I'm thinking of breaking a contract. Because a lot of things, one of them is the meeting of the minds that never took place. So if that's in place, that could be a strategy that could win the case. And there's a few other things, of course. And again, it depends on what kind of case it is before I can even get into those other things. But the bottom line is that, really you want to do whatever's just yourself. You have to be just. It doesn't matter how unjust they are. The other thing is that you can't trust our courts. If I was in court, and I am in court, I've always battled to get the jury. I don't want any individual trying to decide my case. Any criminal case requires a jury, okay? Any civil case can have a jury. If any one of the two parties wants a jury, as long as it's over a $20 involvement there, you get a jury. That used to be an ounce of gold, by the way.
And they'll fight you on that because they don't want a jury.
Right.
Because it's hard for them to control them all the time. So sometimes just by demanding the jury, they'll drop the case or you'll win the case because they don't want to go there. I mean, they're that afraid of that. Anyway.
Yeah, one of the things you want to do in that process is you're setting the stage and really just getting all the evidence onto the record and getting a copy of that record to make sure, because they erase those things. Not only, of course, of the written information and argument that takes place prior to the court case, which is your paperwork, and that's a back and forth process, and then it's the trial. At this point in time, have learned to let the judge know that they don't belong there. I don't want you deciding my case. You have no power, no authority to do this. These judges are judges in equity and not law, and I'm in law. Now, because it's a contract situation in your case and some of my cases too, then I can permit you to be an arbitrator for me, but then there is, through that arbitration, that being the judge being the arbitrator, there is an appeal process, but there's no justice in the federal courts or the state courts, and even in the appeal process, there's no justice there either. So I wouldn't even bother with any of that. I would make my case, make my argument. They'll end up throwing you out or you lose. But you get it onto the record and get a copy of the record. By getting a copy of the record, I'm talking about whatever takes place in the court verbally, that you get a copy of that record, okay, of whatever was said in that court. If you can get the actual recording, that would be great. I don't know if they give that up. I'm going to try to get that myself, you know. But
I think if you ask for it, they have to.
Well, they don't have to do anything they don't want to do.
They'll deny they have it to begin with. But anyway.
Maybe they're required and they should do it, but it doesn't mean they're going to do it. I mean, when you have a judge like I have that refuses to tell you what jurisdiction you're in, and I've asked this judge four times already in two different cases. I've asked this judge in a couple other times in another case what jurisdiction they're in. And the last time I was in court, I asked the judge, are you going to tell me what jurisdiction I'm in? And she said, no, I'm not going to. I mean, what kind of justice is that? I mean, has she not put a nail in her coffin? I mean, this is great stuff for when we get to a place where we can have a court of justice, because all this is going to be resurfaced, okay, and come back into the court system. Doesn't matter what they've done with it. Doesn't matter what they said, okay?
She probably doesn't know what jurisdiction
is. Fraud on the court. No, she doesn't, because she can't give me an answer. Yeah, right.
And then suppose you say you don't have jurisdiction and you challenge her. What's she going to say? And then you say you got to take yourself out because I just challenged your jurisdiction, and you haven't provided it or proved it. So you need to be removed from the case.
Right. And one of the things they do with that is they say I've already decided jurisdiction. But your argument with that was that, I don't understand because I am the only one who put in an affidavit of truth, okay, and it's unrebutted, and you're here to make a decision on what comes before you. You can't go outside of this case. You have to decide what's inside this case, and inside this case they've been silent because they've said nothing. Therefore, affidavit unrebutted stands as truth in the case, and I win. Okay, and again, of course, they will just break the law on that.
I think if you did get to federal court with that, I don't think the federal judge would stick his neck out over that.
It's happened to me right now.
Has it?
Two cases, I just have to. I've been trying to get back to this paperwork to write my finale for them because after I finish in my next paperwork on these two cases. I have no need to go back into that court. I'm just going to wait for courts of justice to open up and move them into those courts. I will move this court for justice. But I am going after them for fraud in the court and accuse them criminally. I'm going to report it to the sheriff, but I don't think the sheriff has the guts or the ability at this point, the backbone. Remember, a sheriff needs not only knowledge, he needs other sheriffs with knowledge. So they don't have the backbone yet. And so I don't think anything's going to happen with that, with an arrest. But on the other side, they would, and it is a criminal act that they're doing. It's a denying of due process blatantly in a court of law. Fraud on the court can only be executed by those who run the court. Okay, I can never be convicted or accused of fraud on the court because I'm not an officer of the court. I'm not running the court. But that judge and those prosecutors or U.S. attorneys, okay. They are officers of the court, and they can be held liable for fraud on the court if you can prove that. And I can prove it. It's on the record. I can prove it on the record alone.
John, I think that the times that we're in right now, that if you ran that decision up to the, in the court, and then you asked for a special prosecutor after he turned you down as judge, you might actually get one today because they're working – of knocking these guys out, and they might that this might be the perfect case for them to give you a special prosecutor. See, they don't like to come in unless they get a complaint.
I think on those terms. I'll write these final papers, see what they do, and then move it that direction.
Yeah, it makes a big, big difference when the people are complaining. Government doesn't fix itself well anyway, to begin with. But at least if you complain, and they're looking to change things now, I know they are, I feel they are, so this gives them an excuse to go ahead and put their foot down on a case. And wouldn't it be nice to have your case be in the precedent one? Or your two cases, whatever, you'd be the first in line.
Absolutely. One of it is a grand jury case, you know, the case against Facebook and others. And the other one, of course, is I brought the IRS into court. That's a personal case.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Anyway, it could get real interesting. I just want to put my 2 cents in. Okay.
But these cases, and no matter what happens, even whatever I do with these cases now on this side, I can reopen them on the other side. And the other side meaning that the arrests have taken place, people are being prosecuted, and the government is being restored. That's when we will get justice.
The thing is I don't know if it's going to come all overnight. It may come by somebody like you complaining. They give you a special prosecutor. They go in and they clean out 10 judges. They may be unwilling to turn the whole system on its head overnight. So they'll take a case like yours, make an example out of it, and then they'll move on. In the meantime, the other judges seen it coming, and they get out of town. That's kind of how Trump would operate, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know
well,
I
we'll
mean?
See how it plays out, you know, yeah. See how it plays out. All I know is that they say, Q says, I mean, many people have been arrested, but they've been kind of nobodies, most of them. And a lot of people have resigned in large corporations and things like that. But the first real indictment and the real arrest is going to shock the world.
Right.
I suspect it's going to be Obama. I've heard others say that it probably is Hillary. Either or would do. But I think the biggest shock, in my opinion, is the arrest of Obama. I think that there's nothing more bigger than that, in my opinion. So, you know, he's a guy that was a sleeping, what would you call it?
Terrorist.
Yeah, he was a terrorist, the enemy of the Republic. I mean, his final words coming out of absolutely his final words coming out of power in some meeting, and we have this on tape. As a matter of fact, I believe we've got it up on our Rumble, so it's on our website, where he makes the statement. The end of the Republic never looked so good. That's how confident that he was and they were, because Hillary was supposed to come in next. That was at the end of his term. Mm-hmm. So he had already set the stage for Hillary to make the final destruction. And just think on how blessed we have been to not have had to go down that road. Because, you know, casualties of war would be a bloody thing and not necessarily what we're experiencing. So, you know, these shutdowns and wearing of the mask and battling all these insane people who are panicking and dealing with the problems that we're dealing with is a much better thing than the horrors of an actual battle at war. So, but nevertheless, we're casualties of war in either side. Doesn't matter. Okay, I think that answers the question. I hope.
I have one more question then, John.
All right.
I would like to know where there is concrete evidence that registering one's automobile with the state is unconstitutional when not engaged in commercial activity. I have found ample court rulings that confirm that driver's licenses are not constitutional for the average traveler and that one is free to use the highways for purposes of travel and commute. Mm-hmm. I would like to accompany this evidence with registration-related rulings. Any help or direction would be appreciated.
Well, let's go to driver's licenses. you know, we need to think about how things were, you know, years ago. Now, let's just go back to just self-defense, okay? Children learned how to handle a weapon in school. You know, I was talking with Brent about this a while ago. He said when he was a kid, that's exactly, you know, that they did. School actually taught children how to handle a weapon. And that's an important factor. Schools should be responsible for many things. They should be responsible for the proper education of our children to be good citizens. And I don't have a problem using that word. Our founding fathers used it 7 times in the Constitution. It is used in a bad way in courts. I stay away from that in court. But generally speaking, the word is not a bad word in my opinion. But our children should be taught civics. They should understand the process. They should understand history, real American history. They should understand their heritage, the common law. They should be taught how to represent themselves in a court of law, on how to defend themselves in courts, how to file papers, or do all of those things. They also should be taught and learned how to drive a vehicle. That all should be done in school. When the children are going to school, that should all be part of school. It's part of life. It's part of things we need to do. Now, as far as registering a vehicle to put onto the road, I don't really have a problem with that. You have to think that out and try to figure out how to really put that together and being careful because, when you go get a title and you get your car, really, you don't own your car. It's just like when you get a title for a piece of property, and you're really a tenant. And if you read it very carefully through the title, you'll find out you're a tenant. So it's a game they play. People don't read anyway, so they don't know. They don't look. We should all be taught to read these fine print papers, because if you got a fine print paper, you can know a bar attorney definitely had a big hand in that, and you better be reading it. But as far as registering a vehicle. What do you think, Gerard? I think there should be an identity on the vehicle so it could be traced. Should there be a problem? I don't see a problem with that. There is a responsibility, a sense of responsibility on the road. A hit and run or something, evidence is there for that, and other things, I'm sure. So, I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that, Gerard? Maybe you got your mic off or you walked away.
John, I could say something.
Go right ahead. Yep.
If we don't have licenses, then we will be responsible for all.
Yeah, I'm not talking about driver's license. I'm talking about registering a vehicle. Okay. Having a license plate on the back of a vehicle. We don't need driver's licenses. You should probably need a special license for commercial activity. Okay, no, I wouldn't argue that point. So a driver's license, if you're going to drive a tractor trailer, you have to learn and be able to pass a test. So you'd probably have to take a course. Well, they do have courses on tractor trailer driving, and you'd want someone who's driving a tractor trailer to have gone through a course and to take a road test and to pass that road test and get a commercial license for that. So those kind of things, cab drivers, they should have. If any commercial activity should have a driver's license focused in on that, whatever the commercial activity is. But as far as the people, as they're just getting on the road, I mean, in the beginning, nobody had a driver's license. Look, if you go out on the Internet, you even go to Google and start looking for the old videos taken back in the late 1800s and the early 1900s, and you see the transfer over from the horse and buggy. I mean, you wonder how they even made it through the day, the way they drove just the horse and buggies through in the cities, and then it transferred over as time went on. You got into the 20s and the 30s, and you had all these vehicles on the roads, and they're just crisscrossing. I mean, it's insane. Now, of course, we have order, and we have a plan over time, and that plan should be exercised to the best of our abilities, but they didn't have driver's licenses. We don't need driver's licenses. Now, as far as a license plate, what's your thinking on that? That's we have to think about how that would work.
We have to keep paying taxes on that. Do we really own it?
No, we should not have to pay a tax on a license plate. Only on a commercial license plate should taxes be paid. And the road tax comes up from the gas tax, but and the diesel fuel tax.
We are required to pay a tax when we register. It costs money to register based upon the value.
Well, it shouldn't be, though. That shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be.
I think a vehicle should have an identification on it. Maybe when it's sold, when you get the vehicle, maybe it should have a an identification tag on the back, and that's that vehicle, and that's that.
Well, it's called a VIN number, right?
Right, but you'd have to have something that people could see, you know, should, you know, something happen, you know, that should be, that vehicle should be able to be identified. I would think, anyway, I think this calls for people to think this out and debate it and talk about it and then come with a reasonable conclusion and see if the conclusion is, yes, they should have identity on it. So I don't have the answer, so that's my point.
Okay, and Brent's here.
Okay, great. All right, I guess, is that the last question, Jen?
Yes, that was the last one.
Okay. Gerard, are you still here? Calling Gerard. If you're talking, okay. Your mic's on mute.
I'm here. Hang on just a second. I'll be right there.
Okay, I'm going to introduce Brent, and then you can pick up on controls here, okay?
Okay.
Okay, so I'm passing the controls over to you. Brent, are you ready to go? Is he in as an administrator, or do you have to unmute him?
He's in as an administrator.
Oh, yeah, he is. Yeah, he's in.
His mic is unmuted, according to the...
Okay.
But we're not hearing you, Brent.
Yeah, maybe you're muted on your computer side, too. You're unmuted. Well, you're unmuted now in the room, but maybe you're unmuted on your, or maybe you're muted on your computer. Nope. Now you're unmuted again. Is your mic plugged in?
And do you have the right mic selected?
Too many questions.
Is there a switch on your mic on and off? I need to get one for my headset. One with a one of the new switches.
Well, he's waiting to come in. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on. And
what do you think about the this having a license plate on a vehicle?
You know what? I've been kind of thinking about that lately. First of all, I don't think you can reasonably expect control and justice if you can't identify a car. You know what I mean? There has to, and just to keep things from being chaos, to me, there has to be some accountability somehow.
Right. Yeah, let's take a case where, what like the Amber thing now, some child is
well, that's kidnapped. A benefit of their control. That's all that is. That's
right. But the thing is, if you have a system like that, which is a good system, and you're trying to locate a vehicle, and if you have the license plate of that vehicle, and you put that out with the year and make of the vehicle, that is a way that really justice can be served, and it's a helpmeet for that kind of a system. You know, we got to be careful. You know, Jefferson said, let me see how he said this. I'd rather have too much freedom than...
Right, suffer the ills of too much freedom than the consequences are not enough.
Exactly. So. But anyway, it's something I think needs to be debated.
Well, let me just say my opinion on it. Yeah. Like, those things work only when people cooperate with them. You see, we could switch license plates every day. Their whole system would fall in space. These are things that we should be doing now in protest.
I think an ID number should be put right into the vehicle when you buy it. It should be on there, period. No taking it off, no putting it on. It's there.
The number is in there, and it's on every part in that car.
But you need to be able to
see it. It's in the computer, and they can pull it out. That, like with an OnStar system, they know exactly who you are, where you are. They know a lot more than you think they know.
But don't you think there might be a good reason why people should be able to see that driver's that license, that identification number for that vehicle?
Especially if he hits me and he runs away. How am I going to, oh, it was a great Cadillac, big deal, that doesn't help. Now you narrowed it down to 4 million cars in New York State, you know what I mean?
Well, there's another good reason why an identification number or something should be on. You shouldn't have to go to motor vehicles again.
Should we have to show an ID to vote?
Well, of course.
Well, there you go. That's the first step. If you got to ID yourself to vote and say that you're an American citizen and you're local and you're this and you're that, and you have that right that citizenship confers upon you. Although under the Constitution, there are certain things that even if you're not a citizen, it's just a human being, they cannot violate. That's the part that gets me. We used to go to these meetings, and they go, oh, he's from Mexico, he shouldn't get any rights. And I said, who are you, God?
Exactly.
He's here. He comes. He has all the rights to remain silent and all that stuff because they caught some Mexican and everybody in the room. We were at a seminar someplace in a gym, and they were going, "No, no, he shouldn't." Yeah, this was down the city. I don't know if you remember, 2, 3, 4 years ago.
And Yeah.
And I said, I said, "You don't know what you're talking about. These are not rules of men. This is from God." And our Constitution, it starts out that all men are created equal. So who are you saying that he shouldn't have those rights? If he's here, he has them already.
Exactly.
People don't get that. They think that it's handed out, and it's not. You know, by virtue of being a human being.
Even if they're here illegally, but that doesn't mean we can't pick them up and send them home.
That's true, but you still have to give them all the rights that a regular criminal has.
Exactly.
Which is pretty good in America.
Exactly.
So I don't know, you know, look, I think you do have to have plates. I don't think that they should own the car. I don't think they should have the title.
Well,
that's
what I think we need to get away from. Look, when you buy the car, you get the certificate of ownership. That's the way it used to be, I understand. So you have the ownership papers, okay, that you can transfer
to
someone
else. You need the title of origin. You don't need that.
I think it's called a certificate of origin.
Right. Yeah.
So you have that. You don't need a motor vehicles for that. You don't need a motor vehicles for a license plate.
Well, you can get that. Some people get that. And in other countries, they get that.
I don't think we need to deal with that. I think the motor vehicles should deal with commercial activities only. Okay, the licensing and
I'm just saying it's hard to own your car if they don't give you the paperwork up front. It's like I'm not going to give you the deed.
No, when you buy the car from the manufacturer, you get the certificate of origins.
Yeah, but
okay?
You never see that.
But that's what you should be getting.
And you can get it.
Yes,
but it's a fight.
But the point is that's where we should head to. We don't need to take it and register with the motor vehicles. It's already registered in the fact that it's been manufactured. And there's everything's necessary in order to trace that down. But maybe putting a number on the back of that vehicle coming right out of the manufacturer, period, end of subject. You know? Maybe,
but then you've got to be able to change the owner on that number. There has to be...
Well, it follows the vehicle.
Right, it follows the vehicle, exactly.
You've got the papers, you've got the number on the papers, you've got the number on the car, you got the car, you got the paperwork.
It's almost a no-brainer.
That's it. You know? I mean, you're not going to know what state the person's from, but I don't think that's all that important. You know?
All I can tell you is the business with the VIN number and all that is so tight now that you never have to worry about buying a junkyard part or motor and them telling you something with the wrong mileage. It doesn't happen anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because they keep too control of that. Every time I inspect the car, I record the mileage, and that goes under that VIN number. So if for a salvage yard to try to make less miles, he's taking a big risk because
he's going to get caught.
Yeah, it's not worth what you think you're going to gain by doing that. It's not worth it. And they have the information. So I'm telling you, they've cut down on a lot of that stuff that used to be blatant.
Brent, are you ready to go? Get your mic going? Because you're unmuted right now. So if you're not coming through, it's something on your end. Maybe your mic isn't plugged in right. Or
you got to snort or something when you come in so we can hear you.
Yeah.
There was something else I wanted to say. I lost my train of thought.
You've been hanging out with me too long.
Oh, man. Well, I can go on like you too, you know. I can get off on a tangent too, you know. It's very easy. I got a lot of opinions, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, you know what they say about that.
Yeah, well.
Mr. Brent.
Hey,
when you get your mic fixed, just pipe it. You just unmute. You just muted. Hold it. I think he disappeared. He's probably rebooting. So let's see what happens. Okay, why don't you take some questions? We'll go into open forum and take some questions. And let us know when Brent gets back in, and we'll see about giving him the mic.
You do.
You got the controls.
Okay.
Do you want the desktop?
Yeah, I might want it, yes.
Okay, so I'll stop sharing.
Because there is something, if we have time, I want to put up there. I got an 8-minute video and a 6-minute video that has
okay,
to
I'm stop sharing. Why don't you share your desktop and just put our front page on, and then you'll be ready to rock and roll
yeah,
when
so
you don't want to share something.
It's kind of current events, and so I don't feel bad showing it because I think that people here at NLA need to have a certain knowledge of what's going on, and a lot of people don't really know what's going on, so sometimes we gotta tell you.
Just make sure, you know, I don't know, I'm sure you're aware of the new system, but you got to be careful because I didn't realize how it worked at first. You can play anything you want, and as long as you're sharing and you click on sharing your audio also, I think that's automatically set.
Yeah, audio and video. Well, there might be two. There might be two.
Well, they're already pre-checked. You just have to check what, you know, you want to give your browser or whatever else you want to share. Anything you don't share... it won't show up, and anything you open new will show up. But the thing is this, if you put on a video and you have the sound going through, or you played an audio and the sound is going through, if you mute your mic, you're muting your video and your audio altogether. So you got to keep your mic open. So what I do is I flip my mic up to the top of my head because I don't have a switch to shut it off, you know?
Right.
I don't know if you have a switch on your mic, but if you... If you click on the button on the computer and you mute your mic, no audio goes through.
Yeah, I'm kind of
so you know that. Okay.
With PSB, I go through the same thing all the time.
Okay. And Terry or Jen, keep an eye out for Brent if he comes back in.
See, I
okay,
got to check the desktop. Oh, wait a minute. Not my desktop. I don't see. I'm trying to share.
Open up your little box for Start Meeting, and down on the bottom you'll see a thing with
the
share.
I got the share screen. It says Select Items to Share.
Right.
And when I put Desktop.
Well, you don't want to share your desktop. You just want to share your browser, or whatever.
I don't see that.
Well, open a browser, open to the front page, and then share your browser. Now, anything else once you're sharing? Okay, because down on the bottom it says share computer sound. That's already checked. Auto share new items. That's auto checked.
Yeah.
And then show preview. That's not checked.
Right,
and I'm not sure what that is. So just I don't touch anything. I just hit my browser and my XP because I have a virtual computer inside my computer. So I click on those two. That's it. And then whatever I open up, it automatically shares.
All right, let me, I'm trying to share right now.
You should get two screens, too, eventually. Pretty much any computer can handle two screens, so.
Right.
Because I have one screen on my right, that doesn't share, the screen on my left shares.
Right. Anyway, let me get my keyboard here, because I got to get NLA up here.
All right, let me take your first question while you're doing that, okay?
Yeah.
And then you can pick it from there. Let's take someone from Sacramento, California. You got the mic. Give us your first name. We know where you're from. Give us your first name.
Yes, first name is Thule.
Thule. How you doing, Thule?
I'm doing good. How about yourself, sir?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, I had two things on my mind, but you guys talked about registering vehicle. Now it's three things. So the first thing that I'm struggling with here is that, I've been looking into common law and court records for the last couple of years here, and to me, the biggest trouble that I have is that, we know that these courts are not court of record, but yet we keep asking these judges to decide over our case. I mean,
that's a big problem. That's a big problem. But then you're no longer in the court of record.
Well, I mean, in California, even in California, the Constitution says all, Supreme Court, appellate courts, superior courts are all courts of record.
That's right. That means they're open for the people to come in and take care of business in courts of law. Courts of equity, that's where we pay individuals, we elect or they're appointed on the federal level judges in order to take care of business in equity. And they also will take care of contract cases if you want them to. As long as the contract is over $20, you can deny them access, control over that and say, no, I want to go in a court of law. Now, a court of law requires no judge, but a magistrate. And a magistrate really is someone who just really documents everything ultimately and signs the papers and sends forth the will of the jury to the sheriff or whatever has to be done to execute the will of the jury. He's just the traffic court cop, so to speak, in a court, and he can't make no decisions. He can't tell the jury anything other than to give them the oath, and that's it. He's done. And at the end of the case, sign off the papers of the will of the jury. Now, the jury are the people, okay? Unadulterated, fully informed, with the power and the authority, understanding that they make the law. They can nullify anything. They can make up law on the spot. This is the way, and they do it out of righteousness and justice, not out of the whim of their own minds, but out of the heart where God has written the law. And that's why you have 12 people, and they got to work that out together.
Correct. And I got a case that I'm going to be filing against my employer because of this vaccine mandate, because of, you know, they're obviously violating my religious liberty.
Mm-hmm.
Because I gave them all the facts, the laws, stating that, you know, this vaccine doesn't apply to me.
Listen, mm-hmm. I can speak to that because this is what I do mm-hmm. all day with people. I have lots of people that are losing their jobs and things like that. And there are plenty of successes out there already. And what I tell people is never quit your job, no matter what they say. You force them to fire you. You make them walk you out. You try to get something in writing that they told you that you had to leave, whether they call it firing or not. Because if you take it to court,
bring a recorder with you.
They will fold before it ever gets to the Supreme Court because, number one, the big thing is this is an experimental vaccine at least until 2023, and then and probably it's always going to be experimental. They're never going to approve it.
Right.
So you don't have to worry about that. Well, it's well-established law that they cannot force you to into an experimental program, which is all this is. And it's actually a weapon, it's a bioweapon, and that's
correct.
Proven. It's accepted. We're gonna have a billion people or 1.5 billion people dead by next year, and that's the loan number, and probably another 1.5 billion after that. So that's 3 billion, which is half the world's population, basically. And this is going to happen no matter what, because if once you take the shot, you have it in you, and it might kill you immediately, it might kill you in a year, it might kill you in 6 years. But Dr. Yeardon, the ex-CEO of Pfizer and one of the inventors of this vaccine, he is not, I know the frontline doctors say, we got stuff we can do. Well, the stuff that they can do, it takes time. You got to follow it perfectly. And you got to have enough of an immune system left that, you know, every shot you take, you lose another third of your immune system. By the time you get the third booster, you're an AIDS patient. These are facts that I can prove. So, I lost my train of thought. But ultimately, the courts know that they can't fine for this. I don't care how communist you think they are. It's well-established law, and it will not go down. I mean, if they rule against this, you know, against Nuremberg and the Constitution and the experimental thing and all that, if they say, no, they can do that, that immediately starts a revolution, and they know it.
A very good record.
But even if you lose, okay, the key thing is, as long as you win on paper with justice and righteousness, you win on that paper and you get a good copy of that paper, you can resurrect this case on the other side, and that's the key point. That's what we're doing with people who are losing their homes. That's why they've connected their cases to us. They've been foreclosed with non-judicial foreclosures, whether it's a tax foreclosure or a mortgage foreclosure. All of that is just so for a resurrection. On the other side, they're going to have to restore these individuals that lost their homes. Same thing with habeas corpus is they're going to have to restore these individuals. And the only way you can restore them is with money, and lots of it.
I think the main thing is you have to fight them. You have to put paperwork in to fight them.
That's right.
Reason.
Get your record.
What's going on is the politicians woke up and realized that the white hats are collecting information on them on all the bad stuff they do. So now they're afraid to put these mandates in and sign them like Hochul. Well, I'm going to mandate it. Well, where is it? She didn't even write it down. She put the word out that there's a mandate. She goes, I'm going to leave it up to the businesses to enforce it. So you see the sneaky thing she did around it to say that she didn't make you do it? Then the employers tell you that it's mandated and you have to have it. That's a lie. That's a lie from hell. And it's not.
And who gave these employers the authority to mandate?
They don't, because there's already been two Supreme Court rulings, one against the school board and another one, I forget what employer, and the judges said, you don't have the authority to do that. That has to come out of the legislator, and even then it might not be constitutional, but you definitely don't have the power to make law and enforce law on your own, because any agency could do that. If OSHA can make a law and enforce it, then so can whatever alphabet agency out there. That's not how this country runs, and that's a blatant violation of the Constitution, and most people can understand that.
Yeah, that system is called corporatism, and corporatism and Nazism is synonymous.
Right,
they're the same thing.
Right.
So anyway, you know, corporate will be part of the government because it's a collectivism. But go ahead.
Let me give you an idea of where we are right now, because this is a chipping away of the stone, so to speak, getting the covering off to get to the live thing underneath. So there was a guy, I don't remember if he was a truck driver or a pilot, and he put in for exemptions, whether it was medical or religious or both. And he put them in, and because they said you have to have by such and such a date. So he was in the office, and he had to do it right there because they were pushing him to the wall. So he put them in, and he waited there, and they wanted him to wait because he didn't have the shot, and he didn't have. The exemption. So about an hour later, they call and they talk to his boss and they put him on the phone. They said, we're sorry, all your exemptions have been denied. And the guy says, oh, well, that's too bad. He said, tell me, is this the office where I send the lawsuit? Can you give me the address? Who do I send it to, you know, for violating international law and American Constitution and my rights and my civil rights? And he gave this whole thing. And the guy said, well, just a minute. He said, I'll get back to you. Within an hour, he called back and said, tell him all his exemptions have been approved. See, they don't want to go to court because they know that they cannot require this thing. And if you look up, have you ever looked up what mandate means? And it means in Black's Law Dictionary, you should go do it. We have them on our site. But if you look up mandate, it tells you what it comes from and how it works. And basically, it says the mandate doesn't become binding anything until the mandee accepts it from the mandator. If he doesn't accept it, it's like a contract. It doesn't exist. So a mandate is not a law, and you have to allow them to enforce it on you. Kind of like what you do to the driver's license. When you get that license, you're saying you will abide by their rules, right? So this is the same thing. It's the same thing the IRS does to you. They got all these adhesion contracts to say that. Well, you agreed, you know. So that, with this thing, that's where we're at. But they're winning it. I'm telling you, resist to the end. They will not. They will never give you a jury. And this thing with the shot, I can't see them even taking it into a court. You know, if they brought it into court, the judge would say, get this freaking thing out of here right now. You know?
Yeah, well, and remember, the administrator that puts forth the mandate, which is the governor, you know, he's the administration of the state, he's the governor, okay? He can mandate, but that mandate only follows anybody that's within commercial activities or working within the government and some government agencies, because that's
right,
the only people he can command. Yeah, it's everything in equity, not in law. The people don't fall underneath that. And therein is the if the people understood the law, if the people were educated and understood the difference between equity and law, okay, they wouldn't be able to pull this off because people say, what are you talking about? Everybody would know. We should have taught these things.
These politicians, some of them don't understand, but most of them do, because Hochul would have wrote that. She knew enough not to write it, and she coerced OSHA into picking it up. And OSHA is just, what is it? It's a government created department, and they don't have the authority to do that. But they fooled everybody into it. Oh, OSHA says you got to do it because everybody's used to OSHA coming in the business and ordering bosses around and people around and all this stuff, and everybody's scared of them. And that they have no such charter, no such authority, none. OSHA, but they had to trick the people because it already came out that the governor doesn't have the authority to run these things like that. They got a very short window of emergency powers, and they violated the crap out of it in the beginning because they made them last too long. There's windows of time that they can do it in, and when that time is up, in order to extend it, there's a whole set of circumstances to prove that you can extend it, and they never met any of them, ever, not even once, to extend it. And even the fact is out now that this pandemic wasn't a pandemic. It was a pandemic of the PCR test that made false positives, and we know that now, and it's clear as a bell. So that whole thing was a violation to begin with, you know? But you're going to have a pandemic now because they released a bioweapon, and people are going to start dropping dead in the next 3 years, and they're not going to connect a lot of them up to the vaccine because they won't connect the fact that, you know, you got this massive brain hemorrhage because you got a shot 3 years ago that gave you microclots, and it took that long before they shut down an artery, you know? So that's right. What's going on, and they don't find those clots unless they test for them. And there's a test called the interleukin test, that this doctor does. He looks at it under microscopes and he finds these microclots, and you have to start treating it then, because if you don't, you're going to die. But if they go in there, if they treat it with blood thinners, and there's some natural stuff you can do, and there's even allopathic medicine that the doctors have that they can control it, and you can't sit there and do nothing because you will die, you know.
Right.
So that's where that's at. But they know exactly what's going on here. And, you know, it's a two thing between the governors, the communist governors, and their control that they're trying to take over us with this so-called pandemic. You know, this is just a power grab for them to take our rights away. And, like, you know, I heard, like, in Australia, they're going to start arresting people and putting them in camps and forcing them to vaccinate. And like really locking them down like they're criminals. Now, I don't know that even in Australia they're going to get away with that, because what's going to happen is they're going to lose the people for sure. The people are going to revolt, and you know, even though they took their weapons away, you piss people off enough, they'll get weapons and they'll make weapons and they'll find weapons and they'll chew your heart out with their teeth if they have to. It's not right. You know, look, I don't care what country it is, the people outnumber the government, you know, 1,000 to 1. So when the people all get in the streets, they're not going to control them. I don't care what kind of weapons of mass destruction they think they have. They're not going to be able to use that to control the populace when it gets that bad. And we're close to that right now. You know, we're close to a worldwide, and don't forget, this is not just America, this is the whole world. And those places like Australia and Canada and certain places that are worse than us is where they want to move it even here. They want to move it across. They tested it there. Well, what's happening right now and what they're not telling you is there's such massive uprising in those countries, they're losing it. They're very close to losing it. And they don't want us to know, you know. So right. That's one of the big things, is they have control of the media, which is something that we're going to have to do we're going to have to get back in order to take the country back. You know, you can't have this news media out there lying to the people every day, you know.
Yeah, and the social media, you know, blocking everybody's voice from speaking on YouTube or Facebook, and they're trying to silence everybody.
Absolutely, they have too much control. You know, they just.
Gerard, are you there?
I am. Who's this?
Oh, it's Brent. Brent's got his mic.
Okay. Hang on a minute. Let me get this stuff off the screen here.
Any final word on that, Thule?
I don't know if I have any more time, but another thing. Do you have more time for another?
Well,
question?
Maybe you can get back into the queue. We'll pick you back up again.
Okay.
Because we're gonna go over to Brent, and then we'll go back over to open forum. But if it's something short, you think we'll deal with it real quickly then?
It might be long. So.
Okay. I'll get back into the queue, and we'll pick you up there. Meanwhile, I'll pass things over to Brent, and Gerard, you got the controls, right?
Okay.
So, all right, Brent Allen Winters, the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. He's going to talk to us a while, and his website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic.
Thank you, John. Let me get straight to it. 40% of all wars, the weak party prevails. 40% of all wars, the weak party prevails. Of course, that's an estimation. How do you tell who wins and who loses? So we don't use the word win or lose. We do like we do in court. We say that this fella prevailed or that fella prevailed. I left court lots of times and walked away and walked down the steps and said to myself, wait a minute, did I win or lose? You know, the judge. Oh, it happened to you too, huh? Anyway, the judge, he does what he wants and goes both directions at the same time. You can't tell what happened. You go back and read the opinion and it's still foggy. But it is true. Vietnam, the weak party lost. The party that didn't have as many men, as many of the materials, they lost. Or no, they won. They won. The weak party won. That's what I wanted to say. They didn't have as many men or materials, and they won. And how did they do it? The American Revolution. No, the American Revolution, so-called, it wasn't a revolution. It wasn't trying to do away with the past. It was trying to reestablish the past. That was not a revolution. Revolution was to do away with the past and forget it and wipe it off the memories of men's minds. But in the American war for separation from Britain, we just wore them down. We didn't have more men. There were 3 million white men, white colonists in the colonies, about 8 million men in England. I didn't count Scotland. There were a few more. They had more men. They had more material. They were the best trained, best equipped army the world had ever known up to that point. And certainly at that time, if somebody wants to argue, no, the Roman legions were better, well, then okay, let's just say in the world at that time, the British Army was the best trained, the best equipped army. And we went up against them and we won. We didn't win by superior numbers. We didn't win by superior materiel. We won because we wore them down over 7-8 years. That's why. Washington wouldn't square off with them for the longest time. Matter of fact, he never did square off with them intentionally, never, because he knew he couldn't afford to. He'd lose. And Congress wasn't going to give any more money, no more money to the Continental Army because they weren't doing anything. And the congressman got impatient and said, we want to see some results. And he said, you be patient. They called him the Fox. The British called him the Fox because he was wily. They'd set the trap for him, get ready to spring it, and he wouldn't show up. He was sharp. And then at Yorktown, he squared off with them, finally. The French joined the fight. He squared off and defeated them and delivered the coup de grâce. The arm of British power in the New World was broken at Yorktown, as J.P. Martin said. He was there. He was there, and he charged through the barricades. He is one of the few men that wrote his account of what happened there. But he gives his testimony and says, he wanted to square off with them. Since he was 16 years old, he joined the Continental Army. Finally, they squared off with him and won. But 40% of wars are that way. And we were talking about this. One of my buddies back in New Hampshire talking about it. He made this comment to me. And I said, yeah, that's happened a lot in history. They have the monopoly. They, the evil empire, the useful idiots of the evil one. have a state monopoly on violence and force, men and materials at their disposal who will do what they say to do or lose their jobs. I have a friend who is now deployed overseas in Syria. He was called away with the National Guard, went with his unit into training in the desert at a remote location and here in the States, and then shipped overseas. I think it was something like 160 men in the unit, or 112, or whatever it was, over 100. They told him, take the jab or get out. Two or three of them got out of all those men, just two or three. I don't know what's going to happen. I certainly wouldn't trust the country to the military services. They're too conditioned to obey orders. And the law enforcement, they're too conditioned to obey orders. They think patriotism is carrying a gun and thumping people, busting heads and stuff. And that's what military men are trained to think. Patriotism is carrying a gun and busting heads. That's not true. Never has been true. So I'm not willing to put any money on them. But I am willing to say 40% of all wars and conflicts are won by the weaker party who has less men and material. And the way they do it is they just don't quit. I'm helping people with a case now. And they don't have a lawyer. They've hired several lawyers. I can't help them I can help them by, I don't enter an appearance for them. I don't become their lawyer officially, but I can help them. And one of the things that I've found that I can do to help people is just encourage them. No, you can do this. You can do this. You can go into court and you can file papers. When the judge asks you to say something, you can say something. You're going to make mistakes, but remember the other side in war, the other side always makes mistakes too. Always. And they're probably making more mistakes than you are, but they don't want to admit it. It's all a bluff game, every bit of it. It's a bluff game. And if you're willing to hang on, there's a good chance you'll wear them down. The Bible says that too, by the way. The way we win is we wear them down. We just don't give up. We stand our ground. We don't quit. And if you quit and just go away and say, I'll let them have it, well, then you're going to lose for sure. You don't quit, then you got to trust God for the result. You may win. You've got a good chance, according to the statistics, 40% of all wars, and that includes war and battle by trial instead of trial by battle. Battle by trial in the courtroom. They stand a 40% chance. Here's something I wanted to do. I don't have a lot of time. I've been wanting to read this book since I read it once back in 73 when it came out. And the name of the book is The Occult Technology of Power. And I thought I lost my copy. And when I moved from the home place, I found it in the smokehouse. Smokehouse! I don't know how it was that the mice didn't get into it. So here it is. Let me start reading it. It's written in such a way as a father to his son. He says this to my son. In this thin volume, you will find the transcripts of your initiation into the secrets of my empire. This is as though the devil himself is writing this, you see, to one of his useful idiots or his demons. Read them again. It's kind of like C.S. Lewis stuff, but it's not C.S. Lewis. Read them again, and for the arcane knowledge, which is now second nature to you, but in order to re-experience the shock and awe you felt 20 years ago, when at the age of 30, the fabulous scope of my power was revealed to you by my trusted and now mostly departed advisors. Remember the surprise to the point of disbelief when with you beheld the invisibly delicate but invincible chains of deceit, confusion, and coercion with which we finance capitalists to enslave this chaotic race of men. Remember the feats of will and strategy that have been required to retain our position, then inspect your retinue carefully. Your air must be equal to and eager for the task, much as you were. Choose him carefully. As I lie here waiting for the end, I can afford to relish the thoughts of our empire lasting forever, as I never dared while in charge. Rational power calculations, so easily disrupted by the thrills of power, are now entirely in your hands. Quote, know, will, dare, and be silent, said the demonist Aleister Crowley. Man is a rope stretched between the animal and the superhuman, a rope over an abyss, said Friedrich Nietzsche. By the way, Nietzsche is the source of the comic book strip and the comic book series and the movies that came later called Superman. Of course, Nietzsche was a German, so he didn't say Superman. He said Übermann, which means Superman in German, or overman, the man that's over and above. I teach you the Superman, said Friedrich Nietzsche, the Übermann. Man is something to be surpassed. And the SS troops carried his writings. That's what drove them to be Übermann. It didn't work out in the end, but that's how it all began. Self-reliance, self-knowledge, self-control. These three alone lead to the sovereign power, Alfred Lord Tennyson. Self-reverence. Do you see something wrong with that? Yeah, worship of self, not worship of the maker of all things. Self-knowledge, self-reverence, self-control. Walt Whitman, a sodomite, said this, and nothing but God is greater. No, and nothing, not even God, is greater to one than one's own self is, said the sodomite Walt Whitman. Do what thou wilt. Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. That's Aleister Crowley. Do what thou wilt. Your will is law. The Obermann, the Superman, self-reverence, self-knowledge. Not even God is greater than oneself. That's the credo of these useful idiots of the evil one. My introduction to your initiation. My son, the time has arrived to make formal what you have confidently awaited for some years. Of all your brothers, sisters, and cousins, as well as the offspring of my close allies, I have chosen you to be the heir of my empire. All the trust funds, the foundations, the accounts through which my empire is controlled shall pass into your hands upon my retirement. All of my alliances, understandings, and enmities with my handful of peers around the globe shall gradually become yours. Over the next 20 years, we shall collaborate closer and closer, you and I, until we finally act as one. For 10 years, you have toured my empire in a succession of managerial assignments and are now familiar with the outward operations of my crucial banking, foundation, governmental, and think tank organizations. Until now, my advisors and I have deflected your questions as to how and if my diverse operations and holdings, which seem autonomous and even contradictory, are integrated into an organic whole to serve the dynasty's interest. The fact that you ask these questions, rejecting my carefully nurtured public image as an idol, coupon-clipping philanthropist, was a major factor in the high esteem in which I hold you. Most of your competitors found puppet leadership in any one of my organizations so awesome and gratifying that they immediately eliminated themselves from the contest for the top position which you have won. Such men of limited vision are necessary for my success. They bend unconsciously to the subtle pressures to which I expose them. They can be led in any direction I choose by simple-minded rationalizations aimed at their vanity without being privy to my motives, which would be short-lived secrets in their undisciplined and even envious minds. Most important to your selection as my successor, however, was your psychological nature, which has been faithfully reported to me over the years by my associates, many of whom have advanced psychological training. It's the psychobabble of the New World Order. A man in my position must have total mastery over his emotions. All actions affecting the power of the dynasty must be taken on the basis of coldly reasoned power calculations. If the dynasty is to survive and prosper at the expense of its subjects and rivals, All power is impossible to those whose pursuit is ruled by sentimentality, love, envy, power lust, revenge, prejudice, hatred, justice, alcohol, drugs, or even sexual desire. Sustained power is impossible to those who repress all of their irrational longings into their subconscious only to have them return in compulsive, out-of-control behavior that inevitably leads to their ruin. Although often clothed in the rationalizations of power calculation, compulsive, lustful behavior is, at root, the emotionalism of a frightened child, desperately projecting his inner agony into reality he is afraid to understand, much less master. Although you now must begin to pursue it consciously, you have already displayed the alienation from your emotional nature that is so essential to achieving real worldly power. You must recognize your emotional nature as a primitive survival mechanism that was appropriate for the judge and perhaps useful to common men, but useless for the tasks that confront us finance capitalists. Attached to what you do, just because you do it, is the primary psychological characteristic of ordinary mortals. Such cognitive dissonance spells disaster for us. Our emotional mechanism makes our lives worth living, but is no guide to the occult arts of intrigue. So continue to gratify your senses and emotions fully at your leisure. As long as the empire prospers, you will have the resources to indulge in systematic gratification, which will leave your rational urges sated and therefore powerless. You will never be in the inevitable and unenviable position of the middle-class strivers who must, from lack of resources, repress their emotional natures if they are to attain any power whatever during their lives. Typically, they end up taking their pleasure from their victories and cruelties of their struggle. Thus, their end ceases to be power, and they eventually defeat themselves with reckless behavior in pursuit of dominant thrills. I have brought you into seclusion with my most trusted advisors in order to inaugurate a new phase of your instruction. Your formal training in the official political economic world is now complete. This weekend will mark the beginning of your training in the occult technology of power that lurks behind outer appearances. As your tutors will explain, occult or secret knowledge is the basis of all power in human society. So I use the word occult advisedly in its pristine usage. Am I sure you are aware of now, by now, productivity is itself, in itself, does not secure power and therefore does not secure the gratifications of life? After all, slaves can be productive. None of my organizations in which you served so well are concerned with advancing the techniques of satisfying human needs and desires. Rather, all are dedicated to the surreptitious centralization of productive but especially coercive efforts in my hands, or in creating the intellectual climate in which such veiled control would be tolerated in the future. I destroy or paralyze productive efforts that cannot be ensnarled in my web. After a break with Professor A, we'll take the floor in order to put finance capitalism into full biological perspective. His short talk will be followed by similar abbreviated summaries by his six associates, all of whom you know well. The rest of the weekend will be devoted to forthright fielding of your questions. And that's the introduction. That's the introduction to this useful idiot's initiation into the occult technology of power. And his first lecturer will be Professor A. He's going to talk about, well, first will be Professor Q, talk about finance capitalism. I hope we can continue this next week. This is Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. And you can find the books there. Oh, and the grand jury and petit jury class is scheduled to begin soon. Sheriff Darleaf has agreed to sit in and co-teach it with me. Go to the website, commonlawyer.com, and sign up for the class. Glad to have you. Okay, back to Gerard.
I can find my mute button. I'll be back in business.
You did it.
There we go. That was very interesting, by the way.
Yeah, I haven't read this since way back when, and this is my chance to read it again. So hopefully,
right.
Yeah, I hope it becomes profitable.
It's well written. It's well written. You know,
you read it. You read it.
Right. I don't know that I've read that. Maybe that was if I read that, I must have read it 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's been around a long time.
Yeah, and but so
we'll go through it again.
I recognize a lot of it, but there was a movie out some years ago called The Devil's Advocate, and it was about Keanu Reeves. He was a lawyer, and he ends up working for a firm where the devil is the head guy, and he takes Keanu Reeves under his wing, and he... When Keanu Reeves finally wakes up to this evil that's destroying his life as he's becoming a billionaire, he realizes, you know, who his boss is, the devil, and the devil gives a speech that, I'll tell you what, Brent, the devil couldn't have wrote it better. Makes an argument for himself. And, I mean, the dialogue is unbelievable, you know, and I said, man, the devil couldn't have sat here and wrote that speech better himself. And he says, you know, and he had arguments, you know, who can say that I was benevolent? And I mean, he really blasphemes God, but he does it in such a way that he's making his case. And I was like, holy mackerel. It was some really good writing. I'm telling you, it was scary. Make the hair on the back of your neck stand up. But, but it reminds me of some of what you're putting in here, because of that story about the initiation, there's so much truth to that whole process, basically. That's how it happens. Anyway, very interesting.
No, I agree. The skull and bones and all the secret societies and even the university system is organized in degrees, and that's all a product of the evil empire. I get it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Back to you, Jared. Yep.
Thank you. Okay, let me get back on the board here and see who was next in line. This crazy thing. Web control. Okay, Ross has been waiting very patiently. Let me unmute you, Ross. Go ahead. You're unmuted, Ross.
Okay. I tried to call that district leader, and her phone is disconnected.
Oh. Who are you trying to call?
District leader for District 1.
Okay, the district leader for District 1, and her phone's disconnected. Yeah. Well, I'm going to have to say that's something that Jan or somebody is going to have to look in and find out why that's the case. I mean, if she's listed as district leader, she's got to have a phone. And if it's disconnected, they should let us know so that we can put somebody else in there. You know, and that's one of the reasons John says to get that follow me phone, because God forbid you lose somebody like that for whatever reason. You know, you can forward the number to somebody else so that they can take the calls. Apparently that didn't happen. I don't know anything about it, but we need to look into that. What state are you in, Ross?
Washington.
Oregon.
Oregon.
Oregon, okay.
Oregon.
Okay, so...
Who was the district leader?
Who was the district leader? Do you know her name? Ross?
I
can look it up.
All right, and we'll try to get a hold of her and find out what's going on so that either you can recontact her or we can replace her if it need be or whatever. I don't know. A lot of people are getting sick and falling out, too. That's the other thing. Go ahead, Ron.
I feel like my someone said to me recently that you guys are just handing it to the Democrat Party.
That again? What are they handing to the Democrat Party?
When people leave the Republican Party, you're just handing it to the
when you leave Republican
Democratic
Party,
the election, the control.
Right.
Yes.
Well, I'll be honest with you. The Republicans are controlled pretty good too, though. And really, we need to get rid of all those parties because they're a problem. And in a certain sense, I think that the bad Republicans are worse than the Democrats because they put on they're a wolf in sheep's clothing. And I think they mislead more. At least with the Democrats, their evil is up front. And you know what they're about and what they're doing. And what did Christ say? He said, you know, be ye warm or be ye cold, but the warm, or be ye hot or be ye cold, but the warm I vomit from my mouth. That's who they are. They're the ones that God vomits from his mouth because they are wolves in sheep clothing. And in my mind, they're worse, you know? So.
Also, we need to fix. They are starting to put the final pieces in the Great Reset.
I'm sorry, say that again. I got distracted there.
The Great Reset.
Yeah, the Great Reset.
Great Reset.
Yeah.
They are already trying to put the final piece in. I think we can't reverse it.
You think so?
Yes, because they're already speeding it up that quick enough that we can't stop what they are doing. That's what John Kerry's saying.
I don't believe that they are that far ahead. That's misinformation that they're putting out there. This is my opinion now. That they want you to think that they're in more control than they are. They're actually hurting, and I know they're hurting because they have no money. Because certain things were put in when Trump was in place that took their money away and went after where their money comes in from. Like, for instance, child trafficking. They were making more money on child trafficking than the drug trade, believe it or not. That's how bad this world is. So they still have a lot of resources, and therein is the problem. You know, and until they're completely run out or dried up, they're dangerous. And that's what's going on now. They want this Great Reset, and they want it the way they want it. There has to be a reset either way. You see, what it is we cannot go on. They've already printed more money and ruined our system. And the fiat dollar only is good for 40, 50 years, and then they need a war. It's the same all the time. Well, they didn't get their war because when Trump came in, he killed it. And so they're long overdue. They're bankrupt, and everybody knows it. They haven't paid their bills. You know, they're just running around like a drunken sailor, and it's all over but the crying, I believe. And look, at America cannot go on with the fiat dollar, and we were the world's reserve currency. Well, we still are, but I don't know how much longer we'll have that status. Of course, if we reinstituted gold and silver, we would gain it back overnight. You know what I mean? And they know that. It's not as hard as everybody's making it out to be. It's simple. This stuff is not rocket science, and the people will get it. They will understand it. They want to make it complicated, but it's not complicated because it's fundamental principles, and it's God, and it's God's money, and all that stuff. It's very simple, really. You know, it doesn't have to be complicated.
Yes.
And look, they're going to bring everything down to bring it back up. It's just a matter of, who are you going to let bring it back up? If it's the cabal, it's going to be as bad as before, maybe worse, and definitely worse. Never mind maybe. They'll be marching us down into hell, you know? So that's what I have to say about that.
I still want to set up the community safety. That's why I need someone's...
Yeah, let's figure out who's next to you. Look at this. The only thing you can do right now, it's the answer to taking back the government. It has to be done at the county level. That's where we, the people, plug in. You know, we can't go up to Washington and plug ourselves in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe if you had a position, you could. What's that?
I was thinking, because I'm in Clackamas County, John said to me, it would be hard to organize Clackamas County because it's a rural county.
It's rural? Is that what you said?
Yes, yes. It's a
rural so it's sparsely,
county,
sparsely, yeah. But you know what you do, and we did it here, and we didn't have quite that problem, but we did in a microcosmic way, is we combine two counties together, and you can do that. And especially out west, I think people are used to traveling long distances between places. And you have roads that you can do 70, 80, 90 miles an hour on and get away with it over there. You can't do that in the Northeast. So as great as those distances are,
it's easier
over there. And you will get people that will come. I mean, John had a meeting. We had people, my goodness, they came from across the state, 6-7 hours away to go to that seminar. So people will do it, especially for the right reasons.
Yes,
so that's all I can tell you. Don't give up. You know?
Yes.
It's going to be a process, and yours is going to be a little slower, that's all.
Yes. This is a tri-area, tri-county system we have in Oregon. It's Washington County and Multnomah County and Clackamas County sort of has the biggest city of Portland as the metropolitan area. Permeates all three counties.
Well, are you telling me the government has already organized themselves into a tri-county thing with some stuff?
Yeah,
actually, if you think about it, it makes sense, right? I mean, you got to save money and you got to work with what you have, and if you have to put counties together, that's what you do. Just keep it constitutional, that's all, you know what I mean? But, yes, it's necessary sometimes to bring counties together because you don't have enough numbers and for lots of different reasons. And the only time you shouldn't bring counties together, if your county's so big that it's going to be hard to manage, you don't need to go outside the county, you know what I mean, into another county. If you got enough people in your county, you know, and you need to really lock your county down, basically. And you can go into another county and give speeches and things like that, you know. But first get your county locked down if it's big enough. But you can't do that. You have to go amongst three counties. And there's kind of an advantage to that if you pull it off, because you're not going to just have one sheriff. You're going to have three sheriffs, because you're going to have three counties. And if you could get them three sheriffs working together as a tri-county, now if they go into the federal court or something and you got three sheriffs from three counties that are tied together, that's their biggest fear. I'm telling you. They're afraid of that, and they don't want that.
So
and that's when you'll start getting resistance. I'm sorry?
Yes, the problem is they're the ones who created that situation in the first place.
Yes, I understand.
Because our Oregon government is the one who instituted a metropolitan system in, like, Eugene and Portland, Oregon, are the major cities. They are the ones who controlled.
And they came together in a tri-county thing, not to give the people more freedom, but basically to take freedom away by doing that.
Yes.
They didn't do it benevolently. Mm-hmm. They did it to control. But now you have an opportunity to take that back. First of all, there's already the idea out there that these three counties work together. That's good for you. Because when you come in with your committees of safety and stuff and you take control, You're going to be taking control in a tri-county way, which is the way, well, it's the only way. Look, they're operating as tri-county. You have to come in as tri-county to fight them, and you need all three sheriffs on your side. So there's your goal. There's your mission right there. Right?
Me space guy, I need to buy three books for, I need to buy books for Montgomery County Sheriff and Washington County
right.
Sheriff.
Well, maybe you got to check and see if they already got them or they didn't. But if they didn't, yeah, you want to make sure they get bought and sent there.
I don't know if they did.
Well, we can tell you. John can tell you.
They get one.
Yeah, John knows if they got one or they didn't. But, you know, way out there, nobody probably bought it for them. And I don't think we're at the point where we would have sent it to them unless, you know, they were like the last, like everybody else had covered themselves, you know. I mean, eventually they would get it.
Uh-huh.
But waiting for us to do it means that we got enough extra runs to reach them, and look at we're gonna feed those counties that where you get more results, more people, you know, first, you know, we're gonna try to do it strategically, let's say, you know what I mean, if possible.
Yes, strategy.
But
strategy, basically.
Look at you. You're going to bring three counties together the whole as you go along, and eventually you're going to see three sheriffs, and you're going to be in better shape than a lot of people, because that's going to give you a leg up on the rest of the country, because you've already incorporated one of the counties, and that's an example for the you know, the big counties that have to do things on their own. They're going to be, you know, they're going to understand that, you know, hooking up with the neighboring county with the sheriff, with the power of the sheriff, is the way they'll get things done. Because basically the power of the sheriff is the power of the people, and you need that. But I want to move on. And look, you got your work cut out for you, but you're in a situation at the end of the day, you're gonna be in a better situation than the average county, because you worked harder, and you're gonna jump up ahead if you got three sheriffs, believe me. Because you're gonna have more enforcement in those three counties than one county alone ever will. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, a matter of fact, there's certain things that NLA would love to do, but I wouldn't even consider doing them without at least three counties under our belt, the sheriffs and, you know, and some of the administrators being constitutional, you know. And it's going to happen. Believe me, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, it's already brewing.
Yeah.
Don't believe anything that they're going to do to reset it. That's all to make you depressed and not want to do something, because we already got it. We're bringing the reset in. That's all bull crap. I don't believe any of it.
Yeah.
So, anyway, we got to get going. It's getting late. Thank you, Ross.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to... Tooley. Did Tooley call talk already? Let me click Tooley.
Yeah, it's me again.
Hey, how'd you get up to the top of the list?
I don't know.
You must have got right back in after you hung up. That's a good strategy. No. So, you said you had another question, right?
What's you didn't know if we topic? Had...
Okay.
I mean,
well, I'll try, and I'll try not to get too long-winded. I want to try to get through the list as long. But go ahead.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. Well, you know, here in California, I mean, it's a liberal state.
Yeah.
And, you know.
New York's right behind you.
And to me, you know, talking to people around me is like, especially the churches. I mean, I went to a few churches, and it's almost like I've lost hope in the people around me. It's like, especially these churches, because especially when this mandate happened, I saw people go to these pastors and ask for help, and all the pastors said, well, we can't do anything about it. You just need to talk to an attorney. I'm like, wait, why are you guys turning people away who are coming to you for help? I mean, in a lot of these churches, you know, I have coworkers that I talk to. They say, oh, yeah, I talked to an attorney. Attorney said, I got no case. And they, you know, and I'm like, what are these churches doing? What's the purpose of these churches? I mean, when I read the California Constitution, to me, it's a religious document. It's saying that the church is the ultimate authority on the land. But yet these churches have turned their authority over to the agency.
Well, because they have. It's
the
because
hopeless...
they're 501(c)(3). and that's why that's the problem.
Yeah.
What that, did Christ say? He said you can't serve two masters. And I'm sorry to say it. There was a time when you could have got away with the excuse of signing on the 501(c)(3) before anybody knew any better. But now, as of today, and the way they're running them, you got no business being in a 501(c)(3) if you are representing God and country, because it doesn't. It's the government, and they take control over you, and they tell you, you know, what to do and how to do it and everything else. Which is basically, they'll even get in there and tell you what passages to preach on Sunday. And they say, oh, do Romans, that tells the people they got to behave and all this other baloney. That's what comes out of that 501(c)(3). So, and they don't even need it. They think they need it because they've gotten fat and lazy and because they get a little bit extra because they're on it. You see, churches cannot be taxed either way. They're exempt automatically under the Constitution. They're an institution, you know, that's sort of written into our unalienable rights. So they can't charge them taxes up front. But they tell them, well, look, we want to make sure you're bona fide and all this baloney. And if you get this number, you know, we'll just accept your exemptions, and we'll throw as an extra added bonus, any we'll let your parishioners write off of their taxes anything they give you, a percentage of what they give you. So that's an extra bonus to the churches by the government letting them write off their donations to a 501(c)(3). Because if they're not a 501(c)(3), well, you could write your donations off, but they're going to give you a lot more trouble, right? Especially today, they'll say, well, how do we know that's not a terrorist organization? It doesn't have our official tax number on it. They could be, you know, and that's the excuse. You see, that's this whole 9/11 thing set up what we're going into today by taking our rights away and getting us all worried about terrorism and all this stuff. Meanwhile, they're the terrorists, and they've locked us down under the guise of terrorism. And so, you know, they want to control the money and everything. And look at that. That 501(c)(3) is egregious. I don't know if you've ever seen the forms that they have to fill out. Every jot and every tittle has to be retorted back to the king, to the government. I would not put up with it to begin with. It's ridiculous. And they think they can't survive without it, is what the trouble is. And then the state does a couple things and takes a couple churches to task and then says, oh, well, we're going to pull your 501(c)(3) status, and that means that you were a fraud and all the tax exemption you got that we gave you, you owe us back, and then they take their property. It's happened once or twice before, but it's very hard for them to do that too much, because if they did it too much, the churches wouldn't sign on eventually. You know what I mean?
Well, even their documentation. I mean, when you file 501(c)(3), you got to name your chief executive officer. You got to name, you know, these titles that are corporate titles.
Yes.
I'm like, okay. And so, it's no longer a church. It's now...
No, it's an entity of... Look at it. It's an entity of the state. When you have a 503(c), you become an entity of the state. So how can you be an entity of the state, a creation, a fiction? It's a fiction of the state. Let me put it... I stand corrected. So if you're a fiction of the state, how can you be also a spokesman of God? Because if the state created you and God created you, gee, you got two masters, you got a problem, don't you?
Right.
So basically they're serving two masters, and there is a 708 or something, which is just a statement, I believe, that you file, that you say you're a church and you notarize it in this. And they have to they cannot tax you, and no, your parishioners can't get an extra 15% or whatever they get off of their donations from you. Too bad. I say that anybody that has money that is just giving the regular exemption, that giving the church the exemption that the government allows them, I don't believe they've even met their tithe yet, because that the government paid that. Gave them that off their taxes to give it to the church. So really, they saved money and made money on that tax exemption. So I don't believe that, you know, if they gave money, I guarantee you they didn't tithe to the church, because the government took care of everything. And basically, if they're using it as a tax exemption to save money, well, guess what? it's a money making deal for the parishioners too, for the benefactors, right? Okay. So I always say, whatever you gave, you better add another 10%, because that's you know, you didn't give what God gave you. Basically, you gave basically what the government gave. Which, if the government give it, the government take it, and they control. So you get the idea.
Yeah, so. It's a repeat of history, because they let the money changers back into the church.
Yeah, exactly. There was, I think it was Chuck Baldwin that was a reverend. He's totally against the 501(c). As a matter of fact, I think he moved out to Montana. I don't know he was very good. He always had lots of resources and sermons on churches and 501(c). And he was in Florida, and he closed up his church, and he ran across the country. I think he thought it was going to blow up back then, and he saw signs, and so he wanted out of where he was, and that's what he did. And I don't know what he's doing today. But if you can look up what he did and what he says about 501(c), and how you get out of them, it's a good resource for a church that's fed up with the system that wants to free themselves. And you know, if you're a parishioner of the church, it's up to you to get them out of that and tell them why they shouldn't be in it and why it's evil. And it's an uphill battle, because basically they feel like they're losing all this income. But you see, if they really trusted in God, they wouldn't have to worry about it, would they?
Right.
You know, because he would take care of them.
They're also very ignorant of common
law. Well, it's nice to play ignorant. The last person who should be ignorant of common law is a preacher, because religion is common law. He knows common law.
Right.
And if he says he doesn't, then he's lazy, or there's something wrong with him. I'm sorry. I'm being a little tough, but you know, you're supposed to be teaching the people the gospel, and the gospel is full of law. Christ taught us the real law, and it's in the Bible. And if you live by those principles, then you're living by common law. So, look, if they can't grasp this, then they need to turn in whatever it is that they do to become a priest or whatever, or a minister, you know, because they're really not up to snuff as far as I'm concerned. You know, and they are serving two masters. So, I mean, I know that's rough and everything, but I am so sure of this now. I've been through this for many years, and I'm more convinced of it now than I ever was, that my position is right, that they cannot serve two masters. I'm sorry. But anyway, I don't know if I helped you with all that stuff, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, it's a downer, because, you know, everywhere I look at all these churches, I'm like, these churches are all bought and paid for by the state. And so, especially, a few of us at this one Baptist church that I went to, we did a men's night where we talked about the Constitution and talked about the founding of the nation. And the pastor got wind of it, and he kicked us out of the church. I'm like, what? Why?
Well, listen, I think the time is ripe right now, just my own mind, the way I think. I think if you wanted to start a congregation yourself and be the preacher and start it, whatever that tax exempt is, where you're just proclaiming to be a religious organization and you're tax exempt and they have to give it to you, and you sign and you make that sworn statement. I think that even though you're not getting the money back from the 501(c), I think you would be very successful. I think that parishioners would give way more than people do today, and I think the fruits will by its fruits it will prove it, and I think you would give them such competition that they would become afraid. You know, I mean, they wouldn't even want you to do it, but they couldn't stop you. You know what I mean? So you got to fight fire with fire. You know, I'd love to see a couple pastors and stuff that want to start some kind of congregation or Christian organization and do it outside of the state. You know, outside of getting a state exemption, because they don't need it. They absolutely do not need it, and they shouldn't be bowing to that, because it's control is all it is, and the government never gives you something without taking something else away, and that's like the devil. If you make a deal with the devil, he always collects more than you give. He gets his pound of flesh plus. So that's and if you don't know that, then you got no business being in that position.
Correct.
All right.
Yep. Thank you, sir.
Yep. Okay. It looks like we got Willie up next. Go ahead, Willie. I don't hear anything. Your mic is unmuted, though. Oh, Willie, I put him to sleep. I'm going to turn your mic off, and I'm going to turn it back on. Can you hear me calling Willie? All right, I'm going to move on. Okay. Brenda is next, and you've been unmuted.
Can you hear me?
I can, loud and clear.
All right. I was a little worried. This is my first time on.
Well, you convinced me that my headphone is working when I didn't hear from the other guy here. So now I know it was him, not me. Well, go ahead, Brenda.
I have a couple questions. One is, does anyone have suggestions or someone I can talk to about some ideas on how to get people involved in my county? I just got one from you while you were talking where I know people in other counties, and maybe I could go to them just encourage people to join. So, because I'm the only one.
We have a lot of resources on the site as far as, you should read Starting a Committee of Safety and all the steps you have to take and all that. But we also have videos and PowerPoints that you can, when you go out, you play them.
I must not have gotten to those yet.
Yeah, no, they're there. And the thing is, and if you need help, you can call. And I mean, when John and I go out, he runs a couple of videos. He runs like a PowerPoint and a video. And then the people watch it. And that's part of the instruction to get people to sign up and know what's going on. So we do have those resources, and you could use your own videos, but we got a lot of good videos that very much pertain, and the PowerPoints are specific to the Committee of Safety. So I'm pretty sure you can get them, that John's got them. Of course, the website's been getting refurbished, but I'm pretty sure that you can pull that PowerPoint off NLA and you could use it like at a meeting that you're at, and it'll make your life much easier.
And I want to just confirm that in order to, I joined up, and then it looked like I started on the education with the Constitution class, so I don't need to finish all the classes. I mean, I think I have to finish just the Constitution, but I don't need to finish all of the classes before I can start trying to begin a committee of safety.
Well, I don't know if John made requirements about that, about what you have to go through. I mean, it's hard to start a committee of safety if you don't have all the knowledge of what you're going to be trying to accomplish. So I could see.
Well, that's what I thought, because I thought I heard that you can just start learning and acting at the same time.
I think you can. Don't get me wrong. I believe that you can. Don't get me wrong. Because
I'm not there yet.
Well, the thing is to take all the courses, it's going to take a few weeks. At the least.
Yeah.
And that depends on how much time you have. It might take you months even. So I would say that you should start initiating the Committee of Safety, get to know what's necessary to do it, and even give the meetings and all that stuff, even start that, at least start it. And, as you're getting educated and taking the courses and reading, and reading our books and manuals, I mean, you can get up to speed pretty quickly as far as knowing what to do and why you're there. But, I think if you waited till you finished all the courses, we'd be losing a lot of time where we don't have a lot of time right now,
Okay.
So
that's good. Because I do feel the same way about that. I also saw that someone posted on the message board that they were constituting several counties. What is that person talking about, that they have all the committee of safety set up for those counties?
Right. In other words, they're doing them simultaneously, okay? So in other words, they got three committees of safety going in simultaneously, kind of what I was talking about to Ross, because he's in a very rural area, and basically he has no choice but to do that. Right. I can't get rid of this. Yeah.
The constituting the counties is what we did way back 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I like that idea. I like the idea of...
Well, you mean as far as bringing National Liberty Alliance into each county with the common law grand jury.
Yeah.
But the Committee of Safety, I know that if Ross is going to try to do three counties at the same time, they would have one meeting with people from each of those counties there. And they would do their paperwork in simultaneously in tandem, and then bring them down and do whatever they have to do, only because it's convenient, and they're trying to pool their resources. So maybe they're saying constituted, maybe that's not the right word, but we're going to establishing your committees of safety, you know, and you can do it simultaneously, you know, more than one county at a time, especially in rural areas. I wouldn't attempt that in New York City by any stretch of the imagination, because it's like trying to herd cats dead in my mind, you know.
I'm in a rural area, so that's why I was thinking that would be good for me, because I have rural counties all around me, and, you know, there's two hot spots on Seth Keschel's map, and that would be Stafford County, and then Spotsylvania. And Spotsylvania, I just got done dealing with. That's an interesting one, but I was trying to help them get the machine tapes for the last election.
Right,
Where did that go? That was.
What county did you say you were in? In state? Because
I am in Louisa, Virginia.
Louisa, Virginia. Okay. And the county's Louisa?
Yes. I'm outside of Charlottesville, in between Richmond and Washington, D.C.
Okay. So, you know, look, we can find people around you. We could give you that information if you want. You get all the jam, and he'll give you a list or an email or whatever with information.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah. And go through. Okay.
Okay.
If you've got any other questions, just call one of us or come back on another Monday night show, you know, that type of stuff to see where you're at and what you're doing. But I'm going to tell you, don't really hold off until you're done with all the classes. I think that you can start talking to people and get them to take the courses, too, at the same time. If possible. It's hard. I know it's hard to get.
I didn't want to do that. I just thought that was, like, required.
Right. Well, it is and it isn't, okay?
Right. I think how to start is at least to get through the Constitution class, and then keep assigning to the different classes, but work on the committees of safety and so forth.
Right, right. You're right. That's right. Okay. But right now, it's most important to get the committees of safety going, because that's where we're at. And we don't have a lot of time. Things are going to start moving fast. And, you know, right now you can get a handle on it. But if things are fluid, it's going to become more difficult to do these things, especially if they're making more chaos, okay? So you want to do it.
I think the problem I'm concerned with is that I'm listening to Patel Patriot, and he's indicating that we are in devolution. So that worries me on how much time I've got here.
No, absolutely. I mean, we're so close on the edge. I don't know what's holding us from going over the edge, but you know, I guess we're not ready yet. So you know, we got a little more time by the grace of God, so we need to use it. But anyway. Okay. All right.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. We got Charlotte from Hawaii. Aloha.
Hey, Gerard. How you doing?
Good. I was in Hawaii when I was probably 4 years old in Honolulu. My father was stationed there, and he moved the family there. So I'm an ex-Hawaiian, man.
Yeehaw.
Anyway, what's up?
Hey, first and foremost, I talked to John Durish last week Monday, and I'm still trying to get through my civics courses, but I was trying to like put a goal of 3 times per week to hit them,
right.
And unfortunately, it's still not fixed. That I was able to listen to it. I want to answer the questions. I want to press next, but there's no questions.
Right. Well, they're working on it, and I'm sorry about that. And that's another reason not to hold back starting your committees of safety, because if you're going to wait till you take those tests and they're not working, I guess you're not going to take them then, are you?
Yeah, you know, I was listening to Bill Thurton, you know, good information. It was actually about serving because I'm actually helping Carl Dix. We don't really have a committee of safety just yet, and we're called like Clean House Hawaii here in Hawaii, and we did a writ of certiorari all the way up to SCOTUS for the 2020 elections,
uh-huh.
The violations, and it got seen, and they denied it, so... You know.
What else do you expect?
Yeah, exactly. And
but you know what? At this point, I would say that's a nail in their coffin.
Oh yeah.
To deny something like that, I mean, if it was me and I was the devil, I would just put you off as long as I could. But anyway, you know.
Yeah. You know, and that's just what I wanted to share real quick, because, like, for instance, we are since that corruption, you know, revelation. Our intent is to educate the people. Well, my intent is to educate the people, as Carl does all the writing because he loves writing legalese.
Right, right.
And so he does the writing, and we're infiltrating the Republican Party because here in Hawaii, they don't do anything.
Yeah.
They hide in the establishment. I call them the executive position, and all of us, you know, district chairs. So we're trying to expose them, hold them as hard as we can. We're pushing. So we have about 14 districts out of 51 so far, and all we need is 24 for the one-third anyway to kind of get more standing and everything. But
right. Well, let me tell you the advantage for pushing that thing through the court up to a certiorari and that is that they blatantly broke the law in public right in front of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically what's going on right now is bottom up, top down. Now that was the old revolutionary communist thing, bottom up, top down. But it's ours now. Our grassroots movement is coming up from the bottom, and we got people going into the top that are patriots now. I'm going to start coming to the surface. So what happened is you already pushed that case up there. Pray to God that you get a good person in the federal government that will take that case and use it, decide to use it because it's there. This is what I was talking about earlier. The fact that you're there, I was talking to John, they'll use your case to make the change when it comes time. And they need the people to step up. See, it's very hard for the government to do this on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Because it looks like a conflict of interest. What are you doing going after me? What's your probable cause? Blah, blah. But when the people step up, especially with a case that say, look, you're wrong, this, this, and that, and then the stupid judge throws it out or rules against you, just figure it to be a good thing because it's ripe. It's ripe for somebody to pick it up and run back with it. And maybe you'll get lucky and that'll happen. So that's what some of your prayers should be, that somebody up there sees it and decides to run with it.
Yeah, you know, we left that up.
And I mean, you could always, as you get stronger, you can always bring it back up. You can always appeal it. You can always go to, you know, you can always do another step. But you got to pick your battles, and you got to do it when, you know, timing is everything and all that baloney, you know. So.
Absolutely. So actually, we have a court case right now. We were seen on the 23rd of December, and our next time we're going to go. We didn't really have to, but Carl thought it was just to be nice to amend our complaint.
I lost you. I lost your internet, I think.
Can you hear me?
That's what it sounded like.
Can you hear me?
I lost the connection.
Oh, no.
No, I can still hear her.
I hear her too.
Oh, can you?
Yep.
Okay.
Oh, okay. You're back now. I lost you completely. Must be my computer if you guys could hear.
Okay. Well, anyway, we have a case in court. So what we're doing is in the Hawaii Revised Statutes, there's this Department of Defense Council of Seven that we're supposed to be giving emergency suggestions to the governor and the mayor, and it's had vacancies of two at the beginning of the pandemic, and there was about three a year later. So we filed a court case asking them what is their who are they listening to, and basically calling them on this. And so they're trying to manipulate the situation and go back to HRS 127 14D, which everybody kind of knows in Hawaii already, that the governor only had 90 days to be a dictator, and how they're just repeating it. So we are actually going to be January 18th, because pretty much the AG that is backing up like 10 other defendants, like the three Department of Health and so on and so forth, the
I lost you again.
The majority Senate House. Can you hear me?
I completely lost you.
Okay. Gerard's losing it. Just joking. Anyway, so the case, what's happening is we're going to be seen on the Oahu people defaulted. We filed default judgments, and the judge kind of kicked it out, even though the mayor did not even respond at all. And the AG in Hawaii that's representing everybody defaulted in their filing
fine time. And it makes noise when I click on it. I just don't hear her.
I hope he's not going to counsel me.
Yeah, I can't hear.
Yeah,
something's wrong with.
I hear. We all hear.
I don't know.
Yeah, loud and clear.
Yeah, I don't know.
Testing.
Gerard's not hearing any of us.
Oh yeah, that's weird. Okay, well, I guess I'll keep going. I don't know. Gerard, did we lose Gerard? I see Terry's
name
there.
Well, that's possible at the moment.
Yes,
oh, okay.
Rebooting.
Do you want me to keep going, or you want me to stop, or I can wait?
I say wait until Gerard gets back up. It'll only be a moment, and
totally.
And because I think he wants to hear what you have to say.
Absolutely, sir. Respectfully. While we're waiting, I think the harmony of the Gospels is so awesome. I try to do like an hour and a half a weekend to try and listen to it. I love it.
Yes,
on a note.
I agree. There he is. About 20 more seconds and he'll be here. 10 more seconds.
Cool.
Well, Gerard, are you back?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
Yes.
And now I hear you. I just booted back in, so I don't know. Crazy computer. Or maybe they don't like the subject matter. Ah. I can't give them credit, though. It gives them more power.
Don't give them any standing.
No, they have no standing. Not on my meeting. See, they tried to shut me up, but my words got through anyway because I couldn't hear you, but you could still hear me. They failed. So take that. How do you like them apples? But anyway, I'm sorry.
Oh, shucks. Okay, what did you hear last? I kind of just hung out and waited for
you. You were talking about the case that was going in, what was going on right now, and what were you saying? There was some point you were making that was pretty important. Where were we? Refresh my memory. I don't remember.
Well, the last thing I recall was saying how we filed a default summary judgment to the Oahu mayor and the AG that's representing 10 of the defendants, which is like three of the Department of Health directors and previous ones, mm-hmm. and the senator majority and all of that.
So you have an AG that's working with you? Is that what I am to assume?
No, they're working against us. They defaulted on filing on the proper time.
So okay, they do a lot because they don't think that you know how to do that.
Yeah, so
a default judgment, which is very powerful, really.
Yeah, so the judge kind of canceled it out because they're like, no way that the mayor would not file. So Carl was able to do another write-up and send it in because he's part of the JEF system. I don't know if that's throughout the whole states, but in Hawaii is an electronic filing system here in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
So he was able to file that again today. So I don't
know.
Yeah,
they're just stalling.
Yeah.
Because they know you have the default. I mean, did the clerk sign it? I mean, you got a signed paper that says default? Put in for it?
We put in for it. We got it filed through the courts in the email online. We filed it. We served it. And then we just got the denial through the judge this morning. And so Carl was able to refile against what he said to rebuttal him, sort of.
Listen to me. You've already won. You understand? You already won. What?
You know what we're asking for? A preliminary injunction for 90 days of all mandates in the state of Hawaii to prove there was a COVID virus and all of that sickness and stuff. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Well, that was what I wanted to talk about. The next thing. Let me see. I got who else do I have here? Española. I mean, look, I'm going to let you go just because I want to maybe get through.
Yes.
I want to get the last guy, and then I want to make a statement here as far as the virus goes and all this baloney. So go ahead, Española. What is it? NM. Is that New Mexico?
Yeah.
Hello. Yeah. You're kind of like under a barrel of water to me, but go ahead.
Hear me now.
Mm-hmm. Like really, and coming out of the bottom of some pipe.
How about now? Can you hear me now?
Oh my goodness, you just blew me away.
Okay.
I don't know what you did, but 1,000% improvement. Oh, now you're back to the way you were. I mean, you got a broken wire on your mic or something?
Okay, I'll tell you what. I got headphones on. I'm going to take them out and use the speakerphone. Okay.
Yeah, because it's definitely a bad connection here. Yeah, now you're coming in somewhat better.
Okay.
Now you're coming in perfect. There you go.
Okay, great. Well, mini lau aloha, okay? And don't stop until you get what you want there in Hawaii, okay? Mm-hmm. And I'm surrounded by the enemy out here in New Mexico. I voted for Trump, and it seems they went and looked, you know what I'm saying, they peeked at who I voted for.
Right.
And so at the height of the riots, July 13th, 2020, they got my gun. Second time they got my gun. Okay. I was given the opportunity to sign up for the Striker Anti-Drug Program during Bush Sr.'s administration, not realizing that by signing, instead of going to jail for 12 marijuana plants in Pennsylvania, I decided to go and I signed up for this anti-drug program, not realizing the contract of adhesion, whereby which I became a wharf or a waif of the federal government, a ward of the federal government, and dying a civil death in violation of the proper alignment of the venues of the court, pursuant the intent of the preamble of the Constitution, and now we have provable a lot of the statutes. We need to go and do a statutory review of the titles in the United States Code And those that are obviously bills of attainder and ex post facto laws in violation of Article 1, Section 9, Sub 3 need to be thrown out
we've had people tell us that. We understand that some of those.
Okay, great.
Some of those
great. We're on the.
Are not. I mean, some of them are very good, but some of them have.
Right, meaning we don't want to. You don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
That's
okay.
Right. LA is aware of that. I mean, John's aware of that.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah.
The China Confucius, okay, who was canonized as a Catholic saint in the 1600s. That's a fact that, don't take my word for it, it up.
I never heard that.
Confucius is a Chinese, he's a saint.
Oh,
and
so
he
I
was canonized.
I can pray to him now?
Canonized. Well, I've studied Sinology since the Kung Fu series on TV.
Okay.
Okay. I was married to a Chinese woman for 6 years.
Right. So
I speak Chinese.
You're immersed in that culture. I was immersed
in
the world.
Yeah, and what I want to say is this. Mm-hmm. First of all, Shumin Jo Marigan Ji. Marigan Ai Ni Qin Dao. Marigan Pang Yo Qin. Shumin Jo Ji. I just said this. Why do you hate us, Ji? Why do you want to kill us? America is loves the Chinese way because it is, in fact, very Christian. If people would study these things on their own and actually compare. I studied Islam. I studied Chinese culture, and the Chinese are no better or worse than we are in God's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
We all understand that. I'm Jewish. I'm part Jewish, but it's not about being Jewish.
No.
Okay. To be a son of Aaron and be in disobedience to the Shem is a really serious matter. Okay. You don't want to be on the wrong side of Etzayim. You don't want to be on the wrong side of Hashemish Adonai Yeshua Yehovah Shah. You don't want to be on the wrong side of that. Okay. You want to be on the right side. And I speak also to the Masons.
And it is universal. You know what I mean?
Right, meaning, I studied the Masonic thing. That's where I lost. I was introduced to you guys years ago, like 7 or 8 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and the investigations led us into an investigation into Masonry and the magic of it all and what's going on there. And I lost the people, this is really weird, one of them was a homosexual. The other one, I don't know whether he was or not, but when it came to really, you know, standing on the line of fire, they betrayed me. Okay, and that put a crimp in things. But this is New Mexico, where we're going down here. We got Sodom and Gomorrah big time. It's legal down here,
mm-hmm.
And that I want to tell you, the Quran says this: segregate those people. You don't kill them, don't bother punishing them, but you don't allow them to teach the kids. You don't allow them to be members in the legal community. They have really compromised the legal community out here. I mean, I haven't done anything wrong, but they use the DSM classification. I filed that bill of information that you put out about the DSM, and all of what you just said in that document has come true, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that document that we put out about 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
I filed that.
Right.
Okay. And that's what, you know, they, oh, you, it's you, you know, and so they came after me. And I hold them off now with Qin Na Wushu Kung Fu. You know, I know how to do that stuff. But what I want to say is this, stick to the guns. Okay, what they're doing is misaligning the venues of the court. Okay, they're not obeying the law, and that's why they're in a tizzy. Okay, they know that they're wrong, and it's their money that's going to dry up. Okay, and
absolutely,
the Bible says that he who troubles his own house will inherit the wind. Thank you, Bill Clinton. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. I'd also like to establish a little balance. Jesus said, the love of money is the root of all evil, not money itself.
Right.
Because Jesus also admonished the guy, remember the talents, the 10 talents, the 2 talents, the 1 talent, the guy with the 1 talent. The master comes and says, what did you do with the money, with the penny that I gave you? Oh, well, I buried it in my backyard.
Right.
And the master then says, you didn't even take it to the bank and get 3 cents per annum on that a year. You're a wicked slave, okay, meaning it's about balance. It's about keeping things in their proper places, okay? And what they did was they allowed interest rates to go crazy, okay? Now, the Bible says that 10% is a number which in the financial world, if you're willing to be patient and wait on the Lord's will in your financial life, the 10% limit on taxes and the 10% limit on interest growth within the economic system is a sustainable and practical and reasonable way to approach this. And what they're trying to tell us is, oh, well, I want my money that you owe me now. Mm-hmm. And they're willing to collect that debt illegally in violation of the constitutions and in the intendment of the statutes, okay? And so what they're trying to convince us of is that your law doesn't belong to you and your money doesn't belong to you.
Right.
And that's a lie.
And you will owe nothing and be happy.
Right. Okay. Now, we've seen, and Vladimir Putin, by the way, looks at us now and he's like, what are you people doing? You know, they allow private property in Russia and even China.
It's embarrassing,
okay.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And in Xi, okay, I agree. Look, I grew up in the 60s and 70s, and I saw the corporations pollute the environment
mm-hmm.
and take advantage of management over labor issues and like that. And that was also tied into the financial houses with these exorbitant interest growths in the accounts of the portfolios. You see, and now it's all coming crashing down. All right? But God is saying, if you're willing to do with a little less that you don't need, in materialistic pursuits, but if you would be willing to sit quietly, okay, just sit quietly and think about things, okay, and try to control your thoughts and your emotions and your desires, a man who spends his time pulling another man's weeds can have no time to pull his own. And if everybody in the world got up every morning and cleaned their front yard and their porch and their house, the whole world would be clean.
Yep.
So it's not that hard. It's not that difficult. But we have people, okay, and again, Jesus comes to separate the sheep from the goats, okay? I'm Rav Chaim, and I'm telling the Jews, recognize your Messiah. Recognize Etzhaim over the Talmud Shulshan. Don't be Shulshan, be Tanakh. Stand with the Rav Habin Tel Aviv, who say Zionism and true Judaism are two very different things.
And that's
okay.
What
and
don't
and
understand.
The heritage of the Jewish people was kindness and generosity, and not the Talmud, and right. and not the Hagoyim Erev Rav. Erev Rav, by the way, those the mixed multitude. Well, if you read Psalm 119 at Semka, God starts out by saying, I hate the double-minded,
mm-hmm.
the mixed minds.
Right.
They don't know whether or not to obey the will of God in their lives, which is kindness and generosity and all of the good things, or obey their president or their king or their bank account or their corporate dictates. Okay, to the expense of others, you see.
Right.
And that's what God does not like. And that is the true definition of the Hagoyim Erev Rav. And there are a lot of Hagoyim Erev Rav who are of the heritage of Aaron. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so, everybody, you just keep doing what you're doing. Okay, I'm working my problem here, and you just keep doing what you're doing, okay? And I leave you with this. There's a great website, Robert Clancy from Australia. Robert Clancy. The best modern exposure of masonry in Hollywood today. That's a great 5-hour video. I recommend you watch it, okay? And it's the ones at the top. The masons on the bottom floor are to be co-opted, okay, and reached out to, okay, and not feared, okay. It's the ones at the top who grow arrogant with their quote-unquote secret knowledge, which is nothing more, by the way, than algebra. That's all it is.
Right.
Knowing how to cook the books.
Right.
You see, that's what God said. That's what sorcery is. Sorcery, the first definition of it, was a calendar maker.
Right.
One who divides into a series, you see. And the key word there in pharmaceutics is not drugs, it's division. The division of a root to make a more powerful medication was the original tent of the Greek word pharmakeios. It's
right.
Not because people are doing drugs, okay? It's because people are dividing themselves from one another over whatever reason. The Quran asks, they will be asked on the day of judgment, why, what came over you that you couldn't help each other?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What came over you? And in the Quran, in Spain for 600 years, Muslim, Christian, Catholic, Jews, and witches and magicians lived together in peace for 600 years in Spain.
Right, right.
Okay. And so the issue is grow up, get over it, get back to school, and get back to work.
Right.
And that goes for everybody in China and India and Russia and Africa and Europe and South America and America and Australia and everywhere else. Okay. That's what will save the world. But that, like John Durash says, it's on you.
Right.
Don't trust some elected official to do this for you. Okay. Don't trust an attorney to do this for you. You do it yourself.
They have no interest.
Thank you very much for your time. I'll be back next week, and I'll get off the queue, and I want to hear the rest of it. So I'll hang with you. God bless you. Okay, don't give up.
Okay.
That's very much. Brent said, don't give up.
Right.
You will stand the line of fire. Jesus said, when you see the abomination of desolation in the holy place, run to the hills. I ran to the hills. I met a guy with a machine gun who took my daughter. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So you will stand and fight where you are. And if you get taken down, you will have faith, okay, that
right.
Not one good deed that you did will not go unnoticed by the Lord, okay? You just do the right thing, okay? If you're cut down in battle, that is a crown of life. That's what he promised you. That's what he promised all of us. So God bless you, and I'm off the queue.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you very much. And we're out of time, so I'll save my thing till next week and keep the faith and study the Constitution, and let's get them Committee of Safeties going, folks. Time is short. See you here next week, 9 p.m., Monday night.